Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Hey, February 6th, 2021. Thank you for joining me today. Doing this on a different platform today because I wanted to test out a new feature on this. I already see something that I dislike about it, but we're trying to make this the best possible show every single day. As we just talked about the other day, a little bit better every single day. That's all we strive for. And all we should strive for is being better than we were yesterday in every way we can try. Now, today we're going to talk about nanotechnology and kind of this development and how it's processed over, how it's developed over the last so many, over the decades, but aggressively over the last so many years in a really quiet way. And now it's just suddenly kind of disappeared in the conversation as it's being built faster than ever right now, which is very telling, but also how, and the way I made the title for the video today is intentional in a way to get people to reflexively think they know what that means, except I don't mean what they think I mean in most cases. What the title means there is the idea about how the vaccine and the way it's being pushed out and the way it's being regulated and surveilled is creating the circumstance in every possible way that's driving in their justification and in every other sense for why they're going to be pushing smart dust, nanotechnology, injectable nano platforms, all these things that are fake news if you look anywhere on Twitter, but actively being built by DARPA and your government right now. So we're going to go over all of this and talk about smart dust in particular and why that is such an alarming concept and why it is interesting in regard to the concept of COVID-19 and what we just talked about yesterday, the Microsoft ID 2020 and their digital ID direction and how aggressively they were trying to drive forward and talking about how they would need some kind of event or some kind of convergence of circumstances to create what's happening right now. That was in 2018. So we have to think about all of this together. So we'll start off today with a discussion about the censorship of people around this before we lead into the concept of Profusa. Now, hopefully this show will actually be shorter than usual, not necessarily short or long as can be, but I'm doing my best to keep these to certain topics as I talked about yesterday. But we're going to start off. Now, I did this before where you could tell me if you prefer seeing me the whole time or not, but what frustrates me is that that's the full screen view that just got updated with the new platform. But, you know, pluses and minuses. Hopefully it'll all be better once we get the platform I'm working on in the very near future. But back to seeing me, I want to start off just to kind of shout out a great interview I did this morning with High Impact Flicks, Brian Young. And the title, as you can see, Censorship, Domestic Terrorism, and Technocracy. And really just a great conversation about how he was just censored yet again, his third backup channel. The links are right here for you. It's just the backup to his backup is now censored. It's absurd. I'm going to touch on today, in fact, but it's a great discussion about censorship and how it's happening. And just to shout out that you should check that out. It's a Rockfin exclusive. So you do in fact need a Rockfin account to see this video, but it's free. So make sure you do so because it's a good account. It's a good platform. Now on the note of censorship, as we move forward, Vanessa Bealey pointed out, as well as a lot of people on Twitter today, Michael Yeadon was just censored. You know, the PhD, the former Pfizer exec that knows this stuff, that's talking about what he knows because he's an expert in this field, that they censored him. Why? Probably medical misinformation. Because, you know, Twitter are the experts, even over the PhDs that have degrees in this field. You know, what we used to call experts, but now it's just whoever speaks the loudest with a position of power. That's the experts today. But he was censored. And funny enough, I was just watching and just reading some of his threads and going, what, you know, how is it that they have not gone after him yet? And of course, that doesn't mean I want them to. I think it's incredible that they're going after anybody in this way, myself included. But I was just shocked that he's saying a lot of truth and he's saying things that they don't want him to say. And then, of course, then here it is. We see him get censored. It's just pretty pathetic. Now, I'm just reading through the comments right there for a second. There's a lot of discussion about who was involved and so on, but I can't actually confirm. But here is his account. And what's interesting, by the way, is it now says this account doesn't exist, which I find interesting because if you look at The Last American Vagabond right now, TLA, you know, at TLA Vagabond, it says this account has been suspended indefinitely, apparently, because they've never even emailed me about what happened. And they instantly banned TLAB 2 when I tried to make it, which is why I'm operating under a different pseudonym at this point. Most of you probably know what that is. But here are the culprits of the Michael Yeadon removal, she points out, and these are the ones that we can clearly see. These are people that are openly going, yay, we did it. We got that person removed. which is just incredible that we're at a point of the world where this is what's okay. But of course, when it happens in another country, oh, look at those terrible people over there in the third world countries that don't know how to manage and give free speech. And but of course, it's just we have no sense of ourselves. No, we're so out of touch with who we are as a country. Thank goodness. Here's hoping Claire Craig follows him. These are all people that are actively trying to get people removed for speaking on things that they're allowed to talk about. You know, experts with degrees. But the point to the finish one is that this is a person, another doctor, who's saying, oh, did I do this? Laughing about it. As she points out that she did this. That this doctor is, in fact, getting another, her better, if you will, in regard to degrees, a PhD, removed. It's just disgusting. And this is cheered on by the establishment, right? She's willing to expose herself for being the last person anybody should ever go to for anything, including medical advice, as somebody who is willing to throw all of that aside to get a pat on the head from the oligarchy. Good job, Anna. You're good. You know, you do what your government tells you. They want that. They scream for that. Virtue signaling. Look at me. It's disgusting. Even if you disagree with him, even if he's wrong, it's disgusting. But we all know that. Anybody honest knows this. Here's a tweet that I was going to share, which is what triggered me to the idea that he is censored today. He just recently shared this. I'd expect a very solid relationship between COVID-19 deaths and XX deaths, wouldn't you? Yeah, and you know what? It's exactly what they were screaming about back before we had the full data, saying, you conspiracy theorists, don't you know that there's going to be huge excess death? Don't you know that will happen? Somehow psychic, I guess. But guess what? It didn't happen. And now the data's out, and they're really quiet about why they were screaming a long time ago about how there'd be so many excess deaths. Why? Because the government was giving you here's a two-month period showing you excess deaths for March of last year. Oh, look at how high it is. But then you look at the full year. Oh, what do you know? It's no worse than other years before it. And that's the point. You point out a fact that's easy to look up, but because you do it in a way that makes you question vaccines, I don't know, it's gone, deleted. Even a PhD. My point is he's saying right there isn't. There's no relationship between excess deaths and excess, in numerous situations here, there's no correlation between the data. Nothing like, he says, how can that be? Worse, as they point out, in some areas there's excess deaths, but few COVID-19 deaths. That's got to be policy deaths, lockdown, surely. So as an expert with degrees, he's not allowed to even consider his own opinion, to theorize based on what he knows. Nope. That's the point I've been telling you guys. You're only an expert insofar as you go along with the narrative. That's it. Yeah, I mean, that's why they're trotting out pediatricians and oncologists and saying, look, tell us what you think about COVID-19. Because the PhDs who know better are all screaming that you're being deceived. And this is what's actually happening, as we talked about actually with Brian today. High impact flicks, a real world scenario. Rogue medical police state is out of control, according to James Lyons Weiler, PhD. Another one speaking out about the truth. I recommend you follow his account. He's constantly sharing important things. But as he's sharing you here, Ontario doctor demoted after criticizing government over pandemic. Understand that. He's not giving medical advice. This is an individual who has a credential as a doctor, so that gives him even more credence to speak on these things, is just simply saying, I disagree with what the government is doing, and that gets him demoted as a doctor. This is what it looks like when you live in a fascist state where the government is the doctor. That's what happens. It's a problem. But see, the people that want to allow this and continue to scream about, yay, censor those people because I like being told I'm right, are the people that are driving this into the ground and are happy to let it happen right up until it swings back around and attacks them too, which always happens. But people like Anna here will never, ever understand that until it happens to them. And they'll be the one like Jordan Sheraton screaming about how I can't believe this is happening to me after you just called for censorship for other people. It's pathetic, but it's happening everywhere. This is what is happening to everybody speaking out and trying to inform you of the truth. Fight for them. Stand up for them. They're standing up for you. Now, on the idea of what they're trying to get at here and trying to reveal to you that there are actually terrible things going on here that they're hiding from you, and no, I don't mean COVID-19, is that there is a lot going on here that they probably sense, that I sense, that you probably sense, that there is a lot happening around the sides of this, and that I think, in fact, are the main point of what all of this is, whether or not there's actually something happening in the context of a virus, a COVID-19. And I think people like this are beginning to sense this. And it's just like, just simply going, you know what? They're not doing what's right. A doctor saying that, there's got to be a lot there for them to challenge, to know that they will be called out and attacked. And I think it is a stuff that we're beginning to find out about the direction that it's all going around it. Now, why would you, I mean, if you have doctors who are calling this out and saying, this is wrong, your actions are wrong. Like Dr. Riedel saying, look, I mean, I just try to remember if I had the video there. I think no, that's actually the ending video. But Dr. Riedel, is the one who was talking about how they're intubating people and they know this is not right, that they're operating under a paradigm that is false. He said that way in the beginning of all of this. The point is, why would they be lying about all of this stuff? Right? What's the end goal? A lot of people are asking that, right? Why would they do that? Well, this is one obvious and easy to put together motive. The World Economic Forum, the Great Reset, Agenda 2030, all of these things needed some kind of catalyst, as they told you, as they talked about in this very article that I'm going to briefly mention again, that they needed something like this. Now, maybe it happened organically, or maybe it was pushed. It doesn't make a difference. Now it's being used, and well, it does make a difference, but in the context of this point, it doesn't make a difference because it's being used and it's driving it forward. This is from the World Economic Forum. Workplace disrupted, 5 themes that will define the future of work. Now, what I find most interesting about this, and by the way, I want to reiterate that Derek Brose has done some fantastic work with a lot of good people he works with at the Conscious Resistance, like James Corbett, a lot of different people in regard to the Greater Reset. Please check it out. It's meant to be a counterpoint to what all of this is from the Davos World Economic Forum, the push for the Greater Reset. But what I find most interesting about this is how asserted they're not saying this is possibly the future or what we think should happen or what you should do. They're saying this is the future. This is what you will be doing with your life. And it's really alarming the way that they state that. Now it says right here, the future of the workplace will be digital. All right, just so understand that, this is the point of me highlighting that is to tie in with this and where it's been going. And remember, this article is from 2018. Okay, this one we're looking at here is recent. This is from January 14th, so middle of last month. Now it says the future of workplace will be digital. And we know they've been building that for a very long time. Now, is that because it will be, should be, or we want it to be? Or is it because they're just telling us it will be? Think of the difference there, the distinction between the two things. Now, it is very important for all of us, it says, to understand that the new normal or next normal, Whitney and I were just talking about this. How can you get the new normal, the next normal? This is just becoming meaningless. If there was a normal that we're supposed to be going, there's only a normal and there's not a normal. There's not, you can't, the new normal, the next normal, the normal after that, the 3 normals down the line. That's not how this works. But they want you to think like that. So you forget about the fact that we never actually went back to normal, which is the real point. But as it says, important for all of us to understand that the new normal or the next normal in the post-COVID era will be shaped more definitively by technology than any other force in the global theater today. Now, again, is that because it should be happening or because it just is or because they're just telling you that it will and that's what they're making happen? I mean, it makes a difference about what people in the country and the world actually want. Whitney and I talked about this in regard to the legacy systems, the idea that people like Eric Schmidt and the AI Commission, the ASCAI, I believe, the Commission on Artificial Intelligence, is openly talking, well, not so openly, but amongst their circles, talking about removing these systems, things that Americans are dependent upon, that are ubiquitous in our lives, such as owning cars or any number of things. They're saying, well, we're just going to do away with those legacy systems because those are hindering us from being better than China. And when they say us, they mean them, not us as the American people. So they're going to change your lives irrevocably to benefit their agendas in artificial intelligence. That's not a hypothetical. That's happening. Did you vote on that? Is Eric Schmidt an elected official? How does this operate when you're working with an unelected power structure? We're beginning to see that build in front of us, the public-private partnerships. It's slowly dissolving in front of us, whatever we thought we had. Now it says, every aspect of our lives, from well-being to work, and everything else in between. I love, it's weird that they say well-being. Like, think about that. When you're talking about every aspect of your lives, they're talking, you would think, okay, you know what, you know, your personal life, your work life, but then they say well-being to work. So they're including your feelings, your internalized feelings, your body, your thoughts. So this is what they're getting at. This is the same thing as Klaus Schwab saying that we're going to be blending our biological and our physical identities. They're telling you what they're doing. And yet all we can get is people on Twitter with blue checks laughing and calling us crazy. And they're either that just pathetically out of the loop or out of touch, or they're lying to you because they're doing it. And then saying, we're doing this. And then they go, you're so crazy for thinking they're doing that. Now, it says specifically, the way people work and interact with their workplaces and the way companies operate will see tremendous changes. Now, thinking about the change, why? Is this because all of a sudden technology is just, it's just developing that fast? And why hasn't it happened until now? And, or is it because of something like COVID-19? And if that's the case, by the way, that's what they're saying. If that's the case, why is it, how does COVID-19 redefine all of these things? It really doesn't. What they're saying is, well, it's just a good opportunity. And then it brings us back to the beginning of the point that they needed a convergence of events to drive in what they already wanted to happen, just like the AI plan, just like everything else we've talked about. How can we not see how obvious that looks? COVID-19 is giving us the opportunity, sure. It has nothing to do with climate change or technology or any of these things, but they're making it the case. So we need to ask at the very least whether they're keeping this whole thing going, as we can clearly see they are, for this type of purpose. Now, there's a lot of options or points they make about what will change. The ones I wanted to think, well, the ones I pointed out that were most, that stood out to me the most. One, they talk about gig economy platforms. Enabled by digital technologies are empowering individuals to take on short and on-demand positions. Now, what's insulting about this is that they don't want gig economies. They don't want peer-to-peer economies. That's the illusion of that. The point is, if you actually had some sort of an Uber without the app, right? Some kind of real scenario where, I mean, you can have an app, just not with the centralized part of it. Or, you know, an Airbnb where you don't have to go through some kind of government or some kind of third party. You email them and you say, hey, I'll take that. Here's some cash. That is the kind of person-to-person economy that scares the hell out of them, because they can't track it, they can't watch it, they can't control it, they can't profit from it. So when you talk about gig economies, they're talking about the ones that they're putting up in place to say, here's a gig economy that they're completely controlling and moving the strings behind and tracking everything you're doing within it. Real person-to-person economies cut out that middleman. So it's interesting that they include that. But it says work will become smarter, as it says in quotes, as artificial intelligence and human-machine collaboration will take over repetitive and routine tasks. Yeah, let's pretend like routine tasks will end up being collaborations. So you have a human over there patting the machine on the back, continue to move that conveyor belt. That's a joke. That is an insulting way to just... Yeah, we're not going to phase you out. We're not going to completely replace you, even though this makes you completely redundant. We'll just keep paying you anyway. It's a joke. They will completely phase you out, and they all know that. That's the point of this whole process. And what's even more insulting is they later on in this article discuss the idea of what will happen to people that don't have those jobs. You can go off and do more things, as it says actually right next to it. Freeing employees to focus on meaningful work. Didn't it just say human-machine collaboration? How is it freeing employees? They're contradictory. They want you to both simultaneously think, don't worry, you're not going to lose your job, but then also say, but you get to free and do more things and we'll pay you money to do nothing. Right? That's what they're talking about. Now it says, I am confident that despite the alarmist warnings, and also just the idea of artificial intelligence should always be concerning to us, but as it says, I am confident that that despite the alarmist's warnings, artificial intelligence will directly or indirectly create more net new jobs than it will displace, and provide additional headroom for human ingenuity, ushering in a new era of exponential innovation. Innovation is not what any of these people want. They want to control the direction. They don't want people with free thought and free, I don't know why I'm blanking on the term for that, free market, to go out and, you know, and just make things on their own and sell them to different people. They want a piece of that. That is why that's an illusion. What happens with artificial intelligence is more top-down control. And that's what everybody anywhere who understands this will tell you, including them, by the way, when it suits their interest and a different discussion. It will not continue to, it won't make more jobs. It'll crush ingenuity. It will create things for a small, isolated group of powerful people. And that's not how it will have to be. but that's what is being built. And I'll make more points about that as we go forward. And also the people in control of what is being built and what they clearly have done in the past, right? It's all about the people driving the bus. Now, it says work for planet. The 21st century is hopefully going to go down in the history books as the era of sustainable economy. It's interesting that I continue to point this out. The idea of sustainability, sustainable development, is now somehow synonymous with a very alarming, sinister agenda. And it is, because they're using it. But let's not forget that sustainability is exactly what we're fighting for, just not within their control. Sustainable in the idea that you should be able to grow a garden in your front yard or collect rainwater or go out and do whatever you want in a way that you feel is most synergistic with the world. But when they talk about sustainable economy, they're talking about a top-down control where you own nothing and they own everything and they make sure they tell you what to do. And that's best for everybody. That's a very simplified idea, but this is what the greater idea will develop to, at least as we believe it. Now, it says, I believe that companies, communities, and countries will rewire their policies and programs at scale to protect the planet and people alongside their need for profits. Jobs that drive this sustainable way of life will therefore be at the center of the 21st century and will grow in millions. And who will be having those jobs? That's the point. But it says, just lost my place. It says technology and tech companies will advise, create, and enable these new jobs. Ah, in the intersection of climate change, where that came from, and public services, as well as consumer products. Of course, they're talking about work for planet, but the idea here is that technology and tech companies, so they're talking about the future of our planet, and the tech companies will be the ones advising the direct. I mean, that's leadership. Why in the world would tech companies have any role in something like this? These are people with profit motives that do things at your expense to benefit their shareholders. There's no reason in the world these people should be seen as altruistic in any way, but that's how they're being painted. That scares me, and it should scare you as well. That, to me, tells me that they're the ones driving this bus. When you can see the president of the United States completely deplatformed across the board while he's still the president, maybe we should recognize there's a power shift happening. Now, the pandemic has given us an excellent opportunity, it says, as always, to transition from designing workplaces for efficiency to designing for effectiveness, inclusion, resilience, and sustainability. Workplaces, right? So it's no longer about who's best for the job. It's about a bunch of other factors that they institute. Now, yes, things should matter in regard to whether people are unjustly giving people jobs that don't deserve them, like nepotism. Giving it to your son when they don't deserve the job should matter. But the problem is when you start to say, well, everybody who hires at some point needs at least one son and one daughter. Well, suddenly you go, well, wait a minute, that doesn't actually make sense, right? And that doesn't make sense. But of course, when you start to talk about races, well, then all of a sudden that the logic doesn't apply. It's like Biden's administration. Sure, is it good that there are people that are good enough to have those positions that are in positions that are minorities, even though it's weird? That discussion itself is racist. And I keep saying that. Like, to discuss that it's a benefit that this person got there, even though they're black, is racist. And it's insulting to the people that you're suggesting that they're lesser than. And so getting there is good for you. It's crazy. It should be based on the person who has the most merit, the most credentials for the job. Whatever their race, creed, religion, or anything. It's just so pathetic that me saying that is racist, even though it's the most inclusive thing you could possibly say. We are living in this backward, bizarro world where people screaming about anti-fascism are screaming fascist things. People screaming about anti-racism are screaming racist things. It's ridiculous. But that's what we're always pointing out. And so when you get to these positions, when you get these powerful people framing it like that, workplaces for effectiveness, inclusion, and sustainability, it should be alarming trigger words for what they really actually are trying to accomplish. Now, it says it is imperative for all of us to realize that all this is for not some far future crystal gazing, but rather change is already happening and accelerating. That is the point. It's happening now. It's already in the process. As we're telling you, look at this crazy thing they're doing without anybody's, you know, without any real investment from the people. And then Twitter goes, you crazy, dumb conspiracy theorist. They're telling you guys, it is already underway and it's even going faster than before right now. And this is the future of our world. Don't you think we should have a say in that? The problem is that you speak up about, you know, just general concerns like the doctor did. Maybe this isn't the right thing for you. Uh-oh, suddenly you're a domestic terrorist. Suddenly you're a conspiracy theorist that's putting everybody at risk. That's what has been created. And it's quite alarming. Now, remember, in 2018, this is Microsoft, the ID 2020 Alliance, Universal Digital Identification, and you, where they laid out exactly the plan for creating this kind of thing. Now, you don't have to believe this is necessarily one and the same, but you have to acknowledge the reality that it opens up a window for using what's happening now to achieve this goal. Now, it says the fundamental mission of creating a universal identification system that incorporates every person on the globe using modern technology and the support of various governments, financial institutions, and more is the goal hidden behind the humanitarian cause, which seems to suggest that that's a cover. A beard, not real, but going forward, just the last part, I went over a lot more of this yesterday, but I want you to see just the last part to recognize this. It says digital identity should be with a person from birth to death. And this is getting into the next part, recognize what that really means. Because I said last time, you already have records that are attached to your name on any computer in the government. So what are they really talking about? They're talking about something that's on you, in you, that does not go away, that you can't toss aside or run from. It's in you, right? You have a digital identity that's attached to you like a computer chip. That's what we're talking about. That's what they're talking about. That's not my opinion. That's what we're talking about here. Now it says, if the lack of a digital identity under the current paradigm limits participation in the modern economy, the lack of the same under a singular globally recognized system, which is what they're trying to build, which is what they're talking about, could prevent participation entirely. Yep, exactly the point. You will be ostracized. You will be blanking on the other word I want to use. I hate when I can't remember words. Banished. That's a good one that works, but you will be kicked out of the society. You will be isolated. You won't be able to do anything or interact. You won't be able to buy things, go on a bus, fly a plane, anything without having conditions met. In this case, people are thinking about the vaccine passport. That's where I see this going. But their point is simply that they have that power. They could turn you off. If the Alliance's goal is a globally recognized digital identity, and we're talking about the Vaccine Alliance, ID 2020, both of them together, if that's the goal is globally recognized digital identity for everyone from birth to death, it says, will that become a global mandate? 2018, we're talking about. How will it be enforced and by whom? What happens to those individuals who are unwilling to participate? Will they be persecuted? How will the implementation of identification evolve with technology beyond smartphones, which what we'll get into next? Will wearables, implants, aren't those fake news? Guess they weren't back in 2018. Implants like those being used in Sweden subways or some form of digital tattoo becoming the norm. Built around a single global identification standard, supported by Microsoft, who will govern this evolving global community? Especially since non-participants in this system would be unable to buy or sell goods or services. Here is something from 9 months ago. BARDA partners with VitalConnect on wearable monitor for COVID-19 patients' nursing homes. Interesting point. Didn't nursing homes, even to this point, right now, it is still a problem. People are still, and we'll get to that in the vaccine part of today, There are all kinds of examples of people, in fact, getting the vaccine and then dying, but they claim it on something else or claim it's COVID-19 or something else. But in any case, we're still seeing people die like crazy, specifically in nursing homes. Last time I checked, we're talking about upwards of 80% of all deaths. And I believe in most cases, over 90% of those deaths are over 80 years old. To be clear, what I said there was over 80% of the deaths in general are happening in nursing homes. In New York, I think it was something like 79% or 70-something. I can't remember off the top of my head, but of the vast majority are happening in nursing homes. And of them, most of them are over 80. Which, by the way, when you then factor that in, it basically shows you that this isn't really happening, but as so many other things do as well. But 9 months ago, as you can see, 9 months ago, they're talking about using these. And by the way, they did. So the first thing we should be thinking about is how come this didn't help them? Their point is, well, this will help us monitor these people and make sure that if they get sick, we can do something and jump in. So either it didn't work or they did work and they didn't care. Now I'll go through this and make some more points as we go through it, but recognize this is exactly what they're telling us is not real. The idea that they have some kind of implantable. Now, this is an in-your-body thing. It's minimally invasive. It's barely. It's more, the perfusal is even more. But this has little things that go into your skin. Now, it says, recognizing the dangers presented by COVID-19 to the elderly and immunocompromised 9 months ago, in particular, the Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority, BARDA, has partnered with Vital Connect, which is this product, to create a wearable monitor that could provide early warning signs and improve patient outcomes. So this is medical pre-crime as well. The device, known as the Vista Solution, consists of four primary components: the Vital Patch, clinical grade biosensor, a Vista tablet, a Vital Cloud, and the Vista Center Central Monitoring Station. Sounds great. Nursing homes in particular will be targeted. I love the word targeted for the devices, granted continuous monitoring to guarantee early indications of health chart changes, or at least to inform on COVID-19 changes remotely. So it didn't. So the point is, We'll get to, I'll show you next, that these things were rolled out to some degree and nothing happened. In fact, this was the worst situation in any circumstance of all of this COVID-19 discussion. So did they gain information from that? Are we to believe that they have real-time biometric data from every one of these people, or in some cases that died during the situation? Couldn't we then be able to use that to find out what went wrong and what happened? I'm sure we could, or whether it was something else, but how much you want to bet? We'll never get to understand this information. We'll never get to see this information. They'll never even get talked about other than on this show. But it says the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, of course, states that early indication of patient deterioration or cardiac arrhythmia will give healthcare professionals the ability to intervene earlier and improve the clinical management of patients in health. 9 months ago, surely that worked well? Obviously not. So again, remember, either it worked and they didn't do anything with the information, or it didn't work at all and they didn't say anything. And we're still pushing the idea of these same wearable monitors despite that. So going forward, now on July 2nd, we can recognize that it is continuing forward, right? So we're talking about the Vital Patch or a Vital Connect. Here it says BARDA backs push for a clinical grade wearable to detect signs of COVID-19. So remember, this wasn't a one-off thing. This is another example of them continuing this push. In July 2nd, the Biomedical Advanced BARDA has teamed with Northwestern University, this time Spinout Sonica Health, to develop a clinical grade wearable for detecting and monitoring COVID-19 infections. The partners plan to file with the FDA this month for marketing authorization. BARDA described the device as a Band-Aid sized wireless patch that sits at the base of the throat. Now, here it says the Northwestern researchers referred to the Vital Connect, which we were just talking about, in their editorial, but contend that there's room for another device designed for the same idea. So now we can see that BARDA and your government are investing and working with multiple groups, and this is not even talking about Profusa, which is another one, in regard to creating these exact kind of biometric wearables. Remember, these are discussions that are, if you talk about this on Twitter, it's considered fake news. It's all being built, and specifically under the guise of COVID-19. Now, here is the actual Vital Connect Twitter feed. This is back on May 5th. It says, under the US FDA, I find it always interesting that all these things are being given emergency use authorization, despite the fact that there's a lot of caveats to that that weren't being discussed, which I'll probably get into in another show, but the idea of such as things like hydroxychloroquine in regard to the authorization of use for that. I probably have it right over here, but I don't want to search for it because I'll lose my place. But the idea is that I showed you that link talking about how hydroxychloroquine had been approved for years, decades. It's been used for years. I mean, it's not the fact that it suddenly became something that, look, I don't want to promote any big pharma drug. I think all of these things are dangerous. But the point is to suddenly make that one more dangerous than anything else is just weird and obviously political. But the point is, under the idea of what emergency use authorization actually is, it's going to drive me crazy. I just want to find this real. Hey, look at that. It's right there. First one. So here is Stella. And you guys recognize her from previous discussions and standing up and speaking out about the reality here. As you can see, this is just on a video she's sharing, but I talked about this already. As it says, hydroxychloroquine was approved by the FDA in 1955, has been used by hundreds of millions of people worldwide since then. It's sold over the counter in many countries and has a well-characterized safety profile. On and on and on. I'm not advocating for use of any of this stuff. I'm constantly advocate for anything but far anything that comes from pharmaceuticals and big pharma. My point is that that is a weird thing to see when the way the media has portrayed this. But Ben's here is pointing out. He says, is it true that big pharma could not get an emergency authorization for vaccines if hydroxychloroquine and many other things had worked in the spring? Here's what he's saying. That's how I read this from the FDA. How about you? Now read what this says. It's under section 564 of the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. Now, it basically says the FDA commissioner may allow unapproved medical products, like what we're talking about with these vaccines, for approved medical products to be used in emergency diagnosis, treat, and everything else, when there are no adequate, approved, and available alternatives. Right? So you could realistically argue that that means that they needed to make sure it didn't work or didn't get used widely so that they could push and justify the emergency use for the vaccine. Isn't that interesting? Just a thought. Doesn't necessarily mean it's the case, but realize that this is what we're talking about now. That authorizing this for use at a time with an emergency authorization use, are we really pretending that there's no viable alternative for a monitor? I mean, think about that. There's a lot of really kind of loosey-goosey actions happening here where they're not following any guidelines or any regulation. They just simply say, hey, we're in danger. You got a pandemic going on. So who cares about rules? How dare you talk about rules when people are dying? Right? That's the kind of mentality they have. And half of them believe it. The other half know they're using it as an excuse. But May 5th, emergency use authorization. So it is happening. That's important to understand. Okay. Going forward, FDA announced that the Vital Patch may be effective. You know, it's being pushed out in the world. Vital Patch keeps tabs on... this I wanted to play for you. Now, this says the FDA granted Vital Connect Vital Patch emergency use authorization in the fight against coronavirus to monitor patients. Vital Connect CEO Peter Van Hoorns joins Tyler Matheson on CNBC to discuss the technology and its applications. Now, actually, let me do this. No, I didn't. Let me just play it right here. So listen to what he has to say here. This is pretty alarming, actually.
Our next guest's company just received an emergency use authorization from the FDA this week for its product to be used in the monitoring of patients with COVID-19.
Let me know in the chat if that's loud enough for you.
And here to explain what it is and how it works is Peter Van Hoorns. He's the CEO of Vital Connect. Peter, welcome. Good to have you with us. Tell us about your product, which is a monitoring patch that can tell remotely lots of things about, among other things, my heart.
Sure. Tyler, thanks for having me, and it's a pleasure to be here. First and foremost, we were a Silicon Valley firm where technology meets medical device.
And there's a big part to start with. Just what we were talking about, just what we're worried about. This is Silicon Valley suddenly getting involved in your healthcare. Good times.
And really, since 2011, we have been inventing a biosensor.
Since 2011, right? So this is definite. Why has it only suddenly been talked about now? This is something that we used to talk about. Smart dust, which we'll get into in a minute, was a discussion a long time ago. It's been around for a decade. Why do people act like it's crazy conspiracy theory? Because there's something going on around all of this. There's more happening here. And so if they can work on these things openly in 2011, and people like Moncef Salawi and Matt Hepburn can be aggressively forward on their direction for biomedical, electric medicine and bioimplantables, and all of a sudden it just kind of gets quiet, and they both are now working on Operation Warp Speed. That doesn't necessarily prove anything, but that's interesting. And it begs the question, where did all of this go? It's not just these patches. We're talking about all kinds of invasive things that are actively being worked on.
That ultimately takes the observation capabilities of an ICU and we miniaturize it down to a biosensor about the size of a dime. And this dime-sized biosensor is housed in a pack.
Which, by the way, I want to point out, and you'll see in a moment, it's sort of ridiculous to me that these things are the size of a dime. It really is, because we're gonna get to a moment here and we'll show you that for a decade now, they've had things that are far more advanced, I would argue, that are far, far, far smaller. So is it only to slowly coax us into using these things, right? So we can, you know, make it large and funky and big and on, you know, so we can feel comfortable with it at first? That's a genuine question. because I know that they could make these things way smaller right now.
Which is affixed upon a patient's body over their heart. And therefore, we can monitor these patients remotely back to a command center anywhere in the world.
A command center. Like, we can, you, we need to pick up on the verbiage that's being used here. A doctor does not, I mean, a doctor can say whatever they want. Who knows, if maybe it was a doctor that used to be in the military, but doctors don't usually say command center when they're talking about the observation of a patient. They just don't. And here we're talking about a real world trackable information that feeds back to wherever they want it to go. That's scary to me.
So essentially what we're able to do is quarantine COVID-19 patients safely away from healthcare providers and other members of society that are not COVID-19 positive.
Now ask whether that, and it obviously does. He just said quarantine, didn't say by choice, right? So we're talking about people that get these to help them. But if you're quarantined and this gets put on you, doesn't sound like it's your choice.
But provide them with the observational care that they would otherwise receive in the hospital, ensuring that we're watching for signs and symptoms of deterioration. And if those signs and symptoms accelerate to the point where they need hospitalization, we can quickly get them to the hospital and get them.
Smallest, lightest biosensor available. I know that's not true. I didn't even pick up on that last time. That's simply false. I mean, I'll show it to you next. Isn't that revealing? Right? The fact that they have to say that either means that they were lied to by whoever is working on this, or the media lied to you because they know the agenda is to not scare you away. In any sense, that's flagrantly dishonest. It really is. I'm just thinking more about there's a couple things. Let me go back one point real quick.
Symptoms of deterioration. And if those signs and symptoms accelerate to the point where they need hospitalization, we can quickly get them to the hospital.
Oh, I think all I was going to say was ultimately that, you know, you could acknowledge that having the ability to monitor somebody in an honest, altruistic setting and not risk somebody getting, you know, whatever. That makes sense. Like from a standpoint, and assuming that's the only thing that was happening here, and clearly it's not, that is something and to be, you know, honest, that you could say that's a good development. But the problem is you could say that about a lot of different things. Technologies and the way these things are used in most cases could be good or bad. It's about how they're applied, right? And that's the thing to think about here. And then when they're lying about what they're using, usually a good indication that they're not being honest.
So this is not for a hospital setting. This is for people who are outside of a hospital. How does it communicate back, and who receives the notice that there may be a problem, an atrial fibrillation or something like that? Does it go through my cell phone or what?
Sure. So the data is collected at the biosensor on the patch. It is sent to a relay, which is either a tablet or a cell phone, Samsung tablet or phone.
Which just to me doesn't sound very secure, just to be honest, right? It's relaying between your phone to somewhere else. Somebody can comment on that, but that just sounds insecure.
And that information is sent to a cloud, an Amazon protected cloud.
Oh, it's an Amazon cloud. Then we're all good, right, guys? Because we know how well that's not been tied into every alarming thing we've ever talked about.
From that cloud, we can provide the access through a website, a secure URL, where any healthcare provider can access that information either from the hospital, the comfort of the physician's office, or really anywhere in the world that they are, as long as they have a PC.
Ah, cool. So when they talk about this in your face, it'll be all about privacy forward. But when they say that, as I always point out, they don't mean the doctors, the government, the people involved, tech companies, Silicon Valley, anybody else that just happens to have a PC. They mean your neighbor. And even then, I probably don't even believe that. But the point is, this is always the case. And they always play a shell game with the information to keep you thinking whatever it is they need you to think so you're not scared away.
So if I were having some kind of cardiac episode, that would show up on a provider or a monitoring systems device at the other end, and they could either call you or call 911 if the circumstances warranted it. This, I would gather, is of particular interest for those individuals who have been or are being treated with the hydrochloroquine or chloroquine, which is the antimalarial drug that is believed by some to have some usefulness here, but also comes with some coronary risk. Am I right on that?
Right. That's right. So the reason we received the emergency use authorization is for two reasons. Number one, we are a remote patient monitoring technology that has the ability to monitor temperature. We have a built-in thermometer. Number two, the patient's respiratory rate. We all know that COVID-19 is largely a respiratory virus. And thirdly, the important SpO2, which is the measurement of the level of oxygen in a patient's bloodstream.
Body posture, fall detection, activity. This goes way beyond monitoring your vitals. Understand that. Like that, this is a real world tracking device, which doesn't seem necessary unless you tie it in with the alarm, the agenda of today. SAT contact tracing and social distancing and, you know, the whole thing together, which is interesting because this was developed long before that. And was even the emergency authorization use was given before we got to a point where this was so intense. So clearly they knew what they were doing.
So we can measure the signs and symptoms of COVID-19. However, we all know that hydroxychloroquine is a well-used drug throughout the United States. And
I find it interesting that he said that, because if you go through the feed of Vital Connect, it's weird. They keep bringing up hydroxychloroquine. It seems odd. And even the way he made it sound like it was kind of suspicious, you know, and this guy's like, well, it's not. Like, it's pretty common. It's just funny that even that happened between them.
The side effect of hydroxychloroquine happens to have is what's known as a prolonged QT interval. That's a fancy name for an irregular heartbeat. And many patients that are given this drug are at risk for a serious irregular heartbeat that could be fatal. Mm-hmm. So we're the only technology available in the medical space that has the ability to monitor the signs and symptoms.
What I find interesting here is that there may be a tie-in for the justification for the emergency use for this under the hydroxychloroquine discussion. Might be worth digging in right there. But the idea that this is, you know, the complications from this drug that may not have, that shouldn't have been used, and you think, you know, Trump bad guy kind of a thing, it's interesting, right? And for those watching right now who may just be tuning in for the first time, two-party illusion, guys. Not a Trump supporter, not a supporter of any political party. It's important for us to remember that. But interesting, though, I just thought about that. But going forward on this, there was a couple more points on their stream. The vital patch is affixed to the patient's chest and constantly streaming key vital data, key vital signs. And then we have this that says, we are thrilled to partner with BARDA in an effort to improve patient outcomes and for at-risk patients. Here's the actual tweet. We are partnering with Vital Connect. This is BARDA, your government, to test a wearable wireless device to continuously monitor at-risk nursing home patients. So again, here's May 20th. They're doing it, right? They are using these to monitor patients in nursing homes. So where's all that data? What happened? If 80% of people died in nursing homes, wouldn't we like to see how this all went down? And on top of that, doesn't that mean that this was being used while this was all going on? Why didn't they change what they were doing? Why aren't they changing it still? People are still dying like crazy in these nursing homes, and we're acting like it's totally not COVID-19. No, they are being killed by the malfeasance of our government. And in this case, I'm beginning to wonder whether this was an experiment in and of itself. Patching them up with all these things, letting this all happen, and monitoring them on the way down. I mean, that's certainly a possibility. We've been tested on in such similar situations in the past. But going forward, I think there's only one more point on here. Just to show you, and this was an interesting one, the Internet of Things Cybersecurity Improvement Act was recently approved by the House and the Senate. All these Internet of Things 5G legislation, all this legislation has been happening quietly under COVID-19. The video I did on YouTube, over a million views, deleted because they claimed I was lying about 5G. And all I pointed out was that Trump quietly signed a 5G bill under COVID-19, which was true. And they even were forced to admit that. But yeah, the video is still gone. They don't care about the truth. The point is, this is all happening. And an interesting point that Whitney was just talking about is that it's obvious that 5G is a linchpin to the agenda, right? There's a lot going on there. Without that, doesn't seem to operate the same way. Now, it says that Vital Connect applauds this effort as it can raise the bar for security across healthcare for $40 billion. So the idea that this is tied in with the same concept, that you can't operate these things the way that they need to without the new 5G infrastructure. And that's why there's clearly an aggressive effort to stifle any discussion about 5G in that way. Interesting, isn't it? Now, let's see. I believe that was basically it. But I wanted to point out at the end of this. Yeah, ultimately. So here we are ending up. Maybe it was the other one. But so the point was just to show you that this is happening, right? These are real things that are being rolled out and your government's involved. Yeah, I think there was another one that I was looking at in regard to another. Which one was that? Here we are. It's Perfusa. Okay, sorry. I just want to make sure I wasn't missing something. There's an interesting point about Perfusa and when their stream stopped. So that brings us into the next point, right? So Vital Connect was being rolled out in May of 2020, being used in regard to nursing homes, being tested on people to be able to watch how they die, how they don't do anything about what they're dealing with. I mean, whatever, to monitor these people. So remember, in 2018, Perfusa, not Vital Connect, but Perfusa, the other thing that's a fake news conspiracy theorist discussion, is developing a family of tiny biosensors, right? They're way smaller than that, even in 2018, by the way. So even that is an effort to misinform you in a subtle way. But just the point is just to realize that this is happening. 2018, Perfusa. Here's Perfusa's wireless injectable biosensor. January 29th, 2020. All right. This is, it's all, you can see the development of this. Now, the Perfusa aspect, as you can see in the next video I'll show you, is they call minimally invasive, but in fact goes in your skin, under your arm. This part of it is just the thing you use to read the information from the thing that's under your skin. Of course, that's all they ever show you is the thing that you use on top. So you think that it's just an outer, out, you know, that's, they're always trying to subtly deceive you. Now, this was March 3rd, 2020. Perfusa and partners announce initiation of study to measure early signs of influenza through biosensor technology. Wait a minute. Why in the world, when in the middle of the biggest pandemic in a century, so we're told, would this group decide to use this to study influenza? Doesn't that seem sort of counterintuitive when literally everything else everywhere is directed at COVID-19? It's almost like they didn't want you to connect these things together. Right? They didn't want you to be like, oh, look, Perfusa, and talking about COVID-19. Look, they're working. They're the same thing. No, maybe that's why. Because understand that announcing this in early measures of stop of early signs of influenza, it applies in the exact same way to COVID-19. So it might as well just say early signs of virus detection. But I find it very telling that it was influenza they wanted you thinking about in this case. And then, of course, as we go forward and see that influenza just magically doesn't exist this year. Isn't that funny? Perfusa, a digital health company that is pioneering the next generation of personalized medicine, today announced the initiation of a study that will use the company's minimally invasive injectable biosensor technology, the Lume, which is the name of the actual product, oxygen platform and they keep saying oxygen platform, even though they're literally talking about monitoring viruses, as a platform to potentially assist in the early detection of influenza outbreaks. Guess what? The study conducted at the Imperial College London, isn't it interesting how they keep popping up throughout this whole process, provide potential indicators of human response to infection or exposure to disease. Provide potential indicators of human response. So they're monitoring you. The goal of this study is to develop an early identification system to detect not only disease outbreaks, but biological attacks and pandemics. Biological attacks. So the point is, in March, Perfusa is using this or aiming to use this in regard to virus detection. Right? So think about the mentality and the direction of where this is being aimed. We can see it. It's being built. Now, here is the video so you can see what it actually looks like and actually showing you that this is, in fact, under the skin.
Lume is transformative science that pairs smart technology on the outside with advanced chemistry on the inside. A single Lume microsensing fiber provides months of actionable medical-grade data on your body's key biochemistry. Anytime, anywhere, in a continuous data stream.
Continuous data stream. Now, the point is that I've already read into this in a lot more. I think I've done this in a past show, but the idea is that they use this piece to pull the data. But they say themselves that this data can be pulled like via RFID chip, but, you know, basically by not chip, but through the same technology. This can be remotely accessed. That was discussed in other articles about this technology. Now, remember, there's multiple versions. And even going back to the beginning of the discussion, remember that there's Vital Connect. There's also, what was this one called? Sonica Health. There's a lot of these. There's a lot of these different wearables that have been worked on back, you know, this is 2020. This is from 2018, though, the discussion for this, or was it here? Here we go. So it's always been developing. And it's weird that this isn't being discussed as they're openly doing this and talking about stopping the development of these viruses. Now, here is March 6th. Injecting the sensor under your skin could prevent future pandemics. So let's not quibble about that. They were pushing this about COVID-19. That was the point, as they show it, right? I mean, they're screaming influenza in their discussion, their products, and their documentation, but this was being directed at COVID-19. Now, going back to the Perfusa Twitter feed, one thing that I find very, very telling, right, going off of the dates we're talking about here, March 3rd, when they started getting into this, suddenly their Twitter feed just died, at least, you know, within that month. There's only one more tweet after this on May 4th. That's it. Now, how does that even make sense? Right? Now, it could be nothing, but I continue to recognize the absence. You're doing something that is, arguably being discussed, is the most important thing, that, you know, the future of our bioelectric sensors and making sure we can fight off pandemics. And they're one of the most important discussion points and technologies, and tied back to all the right people and all the right places. And they just blank out after May. I don't know about that, but I guess we'll find out, won't we, as this goes forward. But regardless of any of it, for all of those that have been watching this whole time and going, that's all fake news, you're misrepresenting all of it, none of that's even as dangerous as you make it sound, here is the actual reality. Smart dust. The idea of what these things actually are and what is really going on here. Now this, let's see if I can get it without playing right off the bat. This is an expert speaking on this discussion. Now this is actually the video right here. Oh, you can't see it, I'm looking at the screen, but MakerCon. Alistair Allen and the quote, inevitability of smart dust. Now, this is an important discussion that I hope you will pay. Well, I hope you'll actually go through and listen to the whole thing, but I'm going to play just some parts of this, and we'll go through and listen to him. But think about what he's saying here and how this relates to where we are now and what this means if this was in existence a long time ago, right? If 10 years ago, you have the kind of stuff that you're seeing here. What he's showing you, and this will be in the video, but these are salt crystals. That's salt. That's table salt. Next to the size of what these actual biochips are, the real size of them. And he says this was years ago. So think about that in connection with the idea that the smallest biosensor possible for cutting edge technology for COVID-19.
Species we see today are going away. Buttons.
Oh, and that's the point he starts out with here to set the table, is that he's talking about how what we're dealing with today. And this is exactly my point, that the biosensor, the Perfusa sensor, is the intermediate step between what we're doing now and where they want us to be. And what he's saying is that these things are slowly going away. And you'll see a picture of it. Your wearables, your phone, your headphones, your nano patch, your Perfusa patch, even those things will eventually disappear into you or the world around you. That's the future, and it always has been, and they're making that the case now. No matter what you think, it's happening, and we can all see it if you're just willing to recognize what's really going on.
Buttons are a great the interfaces we see today are going away. Buttons are a great hack. It's a great UI convention, like buttons. In fact, the whole desktop pirate computing paradigm, it's a hack. It's a great hack, but it's going to go away.
Now just look, you know, note the things we're talking about here. I mean, even those themselves are, you know, the wearable watches, the trackable, the things that actually track your heart rate and then share that with people that you don't know about, all kinds of things. That will eventually go into being just invisible, as he's pointing out.
The devices, the computing behind those interfaces aren't going to go away. They're going to just become invisible. We're still essentially at the banging the rocks together stage for this sort of stuff. And you haven't really seen anything yet. So this is closer to the end of the vision. This is this powder-sized chip, and that's a salt crystal. So this is a small thing. It's something called the mute.
I should point out that I think it's clear, but in general, it's always good to point out that this is edited, obviously. It's a 12-minute, 13-minute video. Cut it down for time, obviously, but just know that. So hopefully you'll watch the full thing, but in no way am I manipulating what he's saying.
chip from Hitachi. It's the smallest commercially available RFID system in the world and can be pulse powered by radio waves. It doesn't require a battery. You can literally scatter the...
Now, for that point, make sure there is a difference between the biosensors we're talking about and RFID chips. But in that same sense, the idea that that dime-sized biosensor is the smallest it can be is simply not true. Now, anyway, you get the point. Let's keep watching.
There's stuff like dust or embedded into a sheet of paper. And you know what the really interesting thing about this technology is? This was commercially released 10 years ago.
So 10 years ago. And we're really going to pretend that 10 years since, and this, by the way, this video is from 2014. So we're talking about 2004 is what he's talking about. So from 2004 to 2021, are we really going to pretend like they can't make something smaller than a dime?
So the inevitability of smart dust. So what is smart dust? Well, smart dust, of course, isn't a new concept. It's originated with DARPA back in the 90s.
DARPA, exactly. Right? Whitney and I have talked about this on shows and been censored as fake news. Literally been called out on Twitter as talking about conspiracy theories. For talking about what DARPA is literally building and showing it on their website. This world is broken. COVID-19 has broken this world.
And it's general purpose computing, sensors, wireless networking, all bundled up into millimeter scale sensor modes, drifting in the air currents, flecks of computing power settling on your skin, ingested, monitoring you inside and out. Mm. And if you don't think that's possible, this is the Michigan Micromote. It's a cubic millimeter in size. And in deference to the speaker before, yes, it runs an ARM processor.
Right, so what he's saying right there, it runs on your body. Right? It runs on your body. And this is what's so crazy about both the chips he showed and this one. This is, it runs on, he'll go into it in a minute, a bunch of different things that produce your vibration, heat, and so on. And so these things don't need anything but you. As he said, ingested, I mean, 2004, guys. I mean, what would stop somebody from putting this out into the world a decade ago? We wouldn't even know about it. Like, I mean, it's incredible to think that. And even the discussion of vaccines and whether or not something would be in them, which I can't prove. I haven't seen any evidence that verifiably says that, yes, they're in these vaccines, but could it happen? Of course it could. Could somebody do it without other people knowing? Of course it could. So it should not be a crazy discussion. But as we well know today, most of these things that are crazy discussions are, in fact, can be some of the most accurate discussions. History has shown that. Things like chemtrails and NSA spying on you and lithium I was going to say lithium, might have probably in your water too, but fluoride in your water, right? Yeah, these are things that were absolute like Looney Tunes crazy stuff. Like go put on your tinfoil hat kind of ridiculous mocking stuff that is 100% true. Like we know that. I mean, think about how crazy it is to be in a world where fluoride in your water is so dumb and crazy that you should be committed. And then years later, oh, it is in your water, but it's for your own safety. And we can't reconcile those things. Those same people can't come back and go, wait a minute, did they really just admit that? I mean, and then they act like it was normal and they didn't even say you caught us, we lied. They act like they never lied. Like it's making people go crazy. It really is. So when we're talking about something like this, or even whether or not it's something that could be put in you without you knowing it, remember that your government, the U.S. government, has experimented on you and people abroad unwittingly 231 times. I believe it was 200. I've said that so many times. 51 times? It's been admitted to. The CDC has admitted this. Operation Sea Spray is always a good one to look up. People died. They tested it on unwitting Americans for their own benefit. But yeah, wouldn't happen today. Of course not.
Computer and it features data processing, data storage, wireless comms, and it's probably as close to the true smart dust vision from the early DARPA days as we've come so far.
Smart dust comms. So think about the idea of, say, people hearing voices or manipulating people, or the idea of a targeted individual. Right? These are things that I haven't really dove into on this channel. It's a very deep topic, but think about that. This is real. This is not a hypothetical discussion. This is old. Right, this has the ability to have wireless comms. It's baffling that this was 2004, guys. Or the other small ones were this we're still talking about 2014 or before at the very least.
To harvest energy from the environment around them and to communicate via a mesh network. And of course, the energy is the key problem with this. You can make the computing small, the energy is hard.
Sorry to keep stopping it. I know that this is actually a lot of stopping, but I just keep hearing this, that a mesh network, that means that these things are interconnectable. The things that are on your skin, right? He's talking about the dust-sized particles that land on your skin, you breathe in your nose, your mouth, it goes in your body. They can connect with each other, right? So that you and the other person next to you, those are, they're meshed. So they're communicating. They know where you are. They know where you, the other person is. They know how close they are. They know how you're feeling. They know if you're scared. I mean, these are, as he talks about the vibrations, this is alarming stuff. Yeah. Someone mentions the voice of God scenario. I think that's actually a different sort of technology. That's more of like a, you know, direct beam kind of thing, but nonetheless, it's the same point, right? This is stuff that people act are just absolutely out of the realm of possibility. And here he is telling you it's, at the very least, absolutely possible. Somebody could choose to do that tomorrow. So how can it be fake news?
Anyone that's actually taken a laptop or their cell phone apart will know that the size of the board compared to the size of the battery is a big deal. So think tiny solar cells for power. And although that's not the only route, there are a whole bunch of other passive energy generation techniques like vibration harvesting, for instance, have already been scaled down quite nicely. And the sort of minute amounts of energy they generate are actually quite well suited to the minute amount of power that this sort of thing needs. And of course, at least for medical or bio use, the body heat is another obvious potential energy source. After how much sunlight are you going to get inside an intracranial bleed? We've made ourselves mechanical Turks inside our own software. Worse yet, we've made ourselves mechanical Turks inside other people's software.
Isn't that interesting? Think about the idea of a cog, right? You know, the cog in their machine. we're already there, whether we realize it or not. As he says, we're cogs in their machine. Like, it's just a good way to think about it.
And there are two ways that this could go. And don't make the mistake in thinking the decisions we're making today with the Internet of Things aren't going to affect that. Whether the architectures for smart dust works in a peer-to-peer manner to make computing power and sensing available to individuals, or whether the network architectures will centralize command and control into a few hands.
Exactly.
The only real question is who will have access to sensors, the computing power, and to the data that is generated. Personally, for one, I don't want a world where the Google Smart Dust and the Microsoft Smart Dust are having a battle for my temperature reading on my skin.
Think about that. I mean, that is next level. That is one of the most, I mean, you're talking about the idea, and that's a very real world scenario. I mean, think about that is the war of the future. If we're talking about a situation where in Syria, we had the CIA and the CIA and the NSA, I forget how it worked out, or no, it was the State Department, the CIA and the State Department, both backing different groups in Syria, and at different points, they were fighting each other. So you've got the government funding different people and fighting each other. I mean, and that wasn't intentional, right? You got so we're talking about the same idea. So now you've got Google and Amazon vying for your data, your biometrics. And what if it comes to a point to where they actually begin to make it a, you know, competitive thing where they're actually vying for that control? And would they then make it some kind of a offensive version that could fight that off? And then what does that mean? Do they even consider what it will do to your body? Of course they don't, right? This is the future of this stuff. And this is what is so crazy, that nobody anywhere is talking about this. And it's not tomorrow, it's now. It's currently being built, currently used, currently happening. And they're making those decisions without us. They're building the world we will be living in without any input from the people that they are, you know, the whole consent of the governed and all. If we actually realized it, we have all the power. That's why they're trying to take it away from us. That's what all this is really about.
The diffusion of computing into the environment will mean not just the computing is always available, but also the computing offers the possibilities of continuous monitoring and surveillance.
Yep.
This is the promise of the IoT. It's the threat of the IoT.
Internet of Things.
And we have to think carefully.
For those who don't know the term, we're talking about 5G. Right, the Internet of Things is the concept of 5G and the tech, you know, and going forward from there too. But that is the technology needed for this kind of interconnectivity. Of it means things like, you know, having smart everything, smart TV, smart couch, smart armchair, smart refrigerator, and they all mesh and they all communicate. And then think about how the smart dust on your body is communicating and meshing with those as well all around you. And anywhere you are at any moment, the data is being fed and monitored and watched and controlled. And the next thing, you got a knock at your door that says, hey, you're going to be sick tomorrow. You got to come with us. This is actually what they're talking about. That may sound crazy to some people, except it's literally what is actually happening. They're actually talking about this concept of monitoring you and letting you know when and if you'll be sick. This is not next week. It is not a year from now. It is happening real time.
Carefully about the architectures we're putting together for these sort of things now, because we will go there no matter what we decide, one way or the other.
They're taking you there no matter what.
And we had the first tenuous glimpse of this reaction to that when Google bought Nest. And people started to panic about their data and privacy. I'm not quite sure why it took Google buying Nest when Nest was not collecting any more data than they were before, but that's what it took.
Because Google we've become concerned about, right? But the idea, the point he's making there is that it's always been there. The problem is not, the problem is Google as well as everything else, but it's not just Google. It's not just Amazon, right? These are merely pieces of a larger game. The idea that Nest is in existence at all should have been right then. We should have been like, no way. It's too late though. Right. Once Google took it over and made it ubiquitous, well, now it's far too late. And that's what he's saying now. Now is the time for us to do something about what they're trying to do tomorrow. Otherwise, it'll be too late.
Mainframes to desktops, to laptops, to cell phones, to your bloodstream, to literally blowing in the wind around you.
Man.
And the architectural choices we're making today to build the Internet of Things are fundamentally going to affect the way those endpoint devices, the mature technology looks.
Yep.
And
I'm not like the internet and the cryptocurrency, the blockchain technology, rather than the analogy I make. Same idea, right? These things, if we do not play a part, they're building this regardless, right? And I mean, maybe we should try to fight to stop it in general. Surely we certainly should. But the point is, in any case, if we do not take control of these things that they're using to build and control our lives, we won't have any say in how these things go forward. The internet is always the example. If people had not turned the internet the way that we have and used it as a way to communicate and free ourselves and fight back, who knows what this would look like right now? You know, the same thing with blockchain technology. That's where they're using this already in a lot of alarming ways. But so too can we, to fight back, to use these things to catalog and, you know, the idea is that if they were using these ledgers right now that were completely open for all of us to see, we would be able to track the military spending. We'd be able to track every vote in regard to what actually happened in the election. They'll never do that though. They'll only do it once they control the way they can manipulate that technology, because they're all corrupt.
I'm scared about the way we're making some of those architectural choices about the Internet of Things. So if you're a startup building Internet of Things things, or if you're a bigger corporation, if you are one of those huge consolidated conglomerates of huge corporations, sit back. Think about the sort of world you want to live in, because the choices you're making are going to change the world. And right now, as far as I'm concerned, the Internet of Things people, and I include myself here because I do a bunch of Internet of Things things, aren't making good choices.
Yep. And that's the point, guys. They're not making good choices, right? And now the question could be, is that intentional? Are they just clumsy? Are they just making mistakes? I mean, sure, that's what they'd want you to think. But I think we know by now that that's simply not the case. They're not making good choices. And in fact, those choices are leading you full speed ahead in the direction that is giving them all the power and control over your body. And these examples are literally everywhere. Everywhere. Now to today, right? All these things we talked about are all back before this, and it's all hypothetical. This is literally being discussed today, February 2nd, but you know, not from a long time ago. Drops of dystopia. Now, here's an interesting point. If I had read this article to start, people would have acted like it was crazy. They would have heard this and been like, that's so stupid. That's just a hypothetical, you know, sci-fi futuristic. Except the fact that I just showed you these things have been in existence for decades, right? So, drops of dystopia. Scientists develop wearable sensor that monitors your health via your tears. Ah, yet the Profusa chip is a dime, and that's the smallest we can make it, though. Trust me. Researchers at Penn State University have developed a wearable sensor that can provide real-time medical data on eye or mouth diseases by monitoring a person's saliva or their tears. The professor at Penn State University claims the device, which employs micro or nanoscale technology, could potentially revolutionize the monitoring and treatment of certain health conditions. So how in the world can this be happening simultaneously? And yet that guy can claim that these things are the best we can do. It's insulting. And people buy it. Tiny, wearable sensors placed near the tear ducts or mouth can monitor a patient's condition on a rapid, continuous basis, precluding the need to wait for laboratory results. With the data viewable on a smartphone or a medical monitor in real time, meaning they could track and watch what's happening elsewhere. Now, this got way, way more crazier than I thought it would when I read this article, right? This is why it's always important to read more than the headline. I had to double check this. Like, I'm thinking, this just can't be right. It is. The device purportedly not only collects data on the patient, but it also medicates them as necessary via a micro needle deployed through the skin in the eye or the mouth. That's crazy. It's only crazy because of how aggressively they're trying to pretend like this is not happening. So I guess it's just totally okay and normal to have a nanotechnology size, like smart dust size thing that can go in your tears or in your eye duct that can simultaneously monitor your health and then also deliver medicine. I mean, that's incredible. Not only is that just incredible, like a feat of technology, but how is this not being discussed? How is the Perfusa chip the big smallest we can do? How is our government continually lying about how this stuff doesn't even exist? And how is this not a very logical discussion to be had around what's currently happening? Try talking about this on Twitter tomorrow and see what they say. That's just incredible. Now it says, quote, through nano to micro steel ports on the device, you know, the device that you can't even see that's on your eye duct, we can probe the cell, to deliver molecular drugs for treatment in a very efficient process at the cellular level. Think about if that's possible. Think about the kind of thing we're talking about with the vaccine and what these things could potentially do or what they could change them to do. Or even if we're talking about, the way they talk about the RNA vaccine, they actually talk about it. They call it a platform. They talk about it like it's a computer program that can be updated and changed when there's a new variant. But doesn't that also mean that it could potentially be changed now or real world? Now, that's not how they're describing it, but doesn't that seem to suggest the kind of same technology or at the very least that it's possible? Yeah, this is a lot of theorizing. Shouldn't we be allowed to do that based on what we can see in front of us? I guess not in the world today where you're only allowed to do what you're told and listen to the quote experts up until they say something different and they're not an expert anymore. Then we talk to the new expert who's willing to say what they say. Right? So you're only an expert as long as you agree with the mainstream media. Isn't that funny? He also claims the device can afford access to gene encoding information on the cell. So apparently this is the size of a cell. I mean, that's what it seems to say, possibly paving the way for a more targeted types of medicine than currently possible. So not only does it monitor your body, monitor your vitals, monitor your movement, monitor what's happening and how you feel. Well, that's actually, I'm jumping the point a little bit, but we'll get to that next. Emotion. But on top of that, it can medicate you based on what they tell you is happening. I guess we'll just have to trust them. But then on top of that, even more, it can actually monitor and access and deliver your coding information, your gene information to whoever needs it. You know, people that are only doing it for your best interest, of course. Remember that big controversy when people were gathering up all the DNA information? And I guess we don't care about that anymore. Now it says, in case the dystopian sounding technology hasn't already gotten your alarm bells ringing, the researchers are in talks with, guess who? Tech giant Amazon and the U.S. National Institute of Health, the NIH, to discuss large-scale manufacturing and rolling out of what the scientists claim is a mature technology. So look at how that came around, right? This thing that just couldn't be real, or it must at least be fake news sci-fi, has gone from being the most next-level thing that seems to contradict what they're telling us is the best they can do to literally being built right now by Amazon and NIH to help you to fight COVID-19. Let that sink in. While we're not even allowed to act like this is real, or that they would dare use some kind of nano-implantable technology that aligns with the idea of fighting COVID-19 or vaccination or medical treatment of any kind, because any variation of that discussion is completely fake, according to the mainstream media. Oh, and as well, right now, February 4th, 2021, in addition to everything else we just said, new artificial intelligence can detect emotion with radio waves. So when we're talking about the kind of implantables that clearly utilize the kind of technology, whatever the late, this will eventually be one. The idea that they can use this to basically, with the technology that's already in your body, detect how you're feeling, what you're thinking. And I know that sounds crazy, but I read stuff 5 years ago that talked about the way that they were using your waves and the way your brain waves look to actually decide what kind of things you were feeling. Now think about where we are now. Deciding if they can actually read them to decide what you're actually thinking, what, like, right down to ideas. At the end of the day, this is all real world. And we're pretending like this has no bearing on what they're building right now. Just like the guy just told us, the choices they make now and are making now are building the world we're going to be living in, and we don't have any say in this right now. Now, on top of all of that, I just thought this was just the absurd cherry on top of everything. Talking about radio waves and being able to use this stuff to, I don't know, bounce off of your implantables or whatever else you're wearing, or your phone or anything, your smart device in your house. Amazon is now installing always-on surveillance cameras in its delivery vans. You know, those vans that are everywhere all the time? I see five a day when I go out. They're everywhere. Yeah, they're using that to spy on you now. Now, this is what you should sign this to be a part of something that's fighting back. Amazon's deliver vans are everywhere, and they'll soon be watching you. CNBC just reported that Amazon is launching the largest corporate surveillance program in human history. Isn't it funny how it all comes together? The same people, Amazon, right? We're talking about Amazon. Don't forget who we just mentioned. Amazon is the giant Amazon, the tech giant, excuse me, is involved with building these tear duct size medical advice giving or reading medical. I can't talk today. These tiny devices that can give you medicine, that can monitor your body, and Amazon's building them. And in the same time, they're monitoring you all the time. This is not a coincidence, guys. This is interconnected. Here's another example of how this is happening everywhere, not even just in the United States. Police to use a network of 1,000 Anvashak AI cameras to spotlight a person's every movement. This is February 2nd of this year. Mass private eye. Researchers have figured out a way to turn a vast network of CCTV cameras into one massive surveillance network, which can target a specific vehicle or person. Now, Anvashak is the Hindi word for investigator, gives law enforcement the ability to overlap the camera feeds from 1,000 CCTV video cameras to track an individual person. Now, this is in India, but realize that we just talked about the Amazon cameras being used one of those brands where you've got the doorbell cameras. They were being used by authorities to monitor. Right? This is happening without your involvement, without whether or not you even allow it. It's everywhere. Then realize that in 2019, scientists proposed putting nanobots in our body to create global super brain. But it's fake news, though. Don't forget that, though. It's totally not happening. And if you think so, you're crazy. But in 2019, they were proposing that we do that with the things that didn't exist. Isn't that great? This is literally a point in the world where we can see the truth. We can see the lies. We can see the data, the science, the information, and it's just a matter of whether you're willing to look past what they're telling you is happening. And that's just wild to me. How can that be the only barrier? And how can people not choose to just look past it, even for curiosity? How can this be happening in 2019? It can be happening because it's always been a plan, a drive, an agenda. We've been seeing this build. And then suddenly, when it's coming to fruition, it just drops off the map. Perfusa goes silent in the middle of last year. Everything just gets quiet. And the vaccines begin to roll out. A team has proposed using nanobots to create the Internet of Thoughts, where instant knowledge could be downloaded just by thinking it. An international team of scientists led by members of the UC Berkeley and the U.S. Institute for Molecular Manufacturing, sounds like an honest place, predicts that exponential progress in nanotechnology, nanomedicine, artificial intelligence, and computation will lead this century to the development of a human brain cloud interface. So I guess they were just psychic, right? Half a year, 6 months before, 7 months before, 8 months before. We're going, yeah, we think that this next year, we think that it's going to be the year that all of this gets kicked into, right? And certainly they were correct. Or maybe they knew something that we didn't. How long until we have our global super brain of nanobots? Maybe happening right now. Certainly possible. Certainly something we should be allowed to ask. Now, I'm not actually saying that I believe, I really don't actually think the most logic, let's put it this way. If I had to put it a percentage, I would say I'm like 40% possible that there's something in these things, 60% that they're using the process of this to drive us in that direction. I can prove the latter. I can prove you that that's clearly being used, but I cannot prove with facts and evidence that there's something in there. So that's just, you know me by now. I'm not going to report that, but I'm willing to entertain possibilities. And based on what we're seeing here, Is it possible? Of course it is. Beyond the shadow of a doubt, it is possible. So we should be allowed to talk about it. Ask whether it's possible, whether they're doing it, whether people might have a motivation to drive it forward. And on that note about vaccines, let's talk about how this is happening. Or actually, excuse me, there was this last point before we get into that. Forgot that I added this. And this is interesting. This is the kind of crossover between the nanotechnology sort of like, as I keep telling you, I believe that the COVID-19 thing is going to kind of get pulled in with some kind of foreign entity where they claim, and we've talked about the cyber pandemic, which is what comes up in this article. There's an interesting crossover between these things. And I'm just theorizing. I leave it to you guys to consider what this means, but it's interesting to see the constant overlap with the Capitol and with MAGA and Q and the domestic terrorism and how it all sort of ties back in with this drive about pandemics. Now, this is February 1st. By the way, I don't know why in the world it says February 8th, February 6th. I don't even know how that makes sense, but it's February 1st when this is published. Here's what the article says. And you can read this for yourself if you want to read the full thing. I just want to point out some points it made and then reference the part that I found really telling. Interestingly, though, this is a point that I hope people can take this to heart. How we can take people, they're constantly being told, you know, they're doing this and Iran's hacking that and they're, and that's why we're responding. This is a clear example of what we know as a matter of fact happened. And I want you to, this needs to reflect on COVID-19, on the way that they're conducting their cyber attacks themselves, the way that they're conducting their military operations, that we need to question whether they're behind a lot of the things that are happening, just like we see right here. In 2010, a computer worm called Stuxnet, which we reported on, created by the U.S. and Israel, in operation approved by George W. Bush and continued by Obama, was discovered to have devastated Iran's nuclear program. Now, whatever you think about Iran or their program, that is a crime. No matter what you think about that, that is a crime. And it gets even worse when you remember how it actually went down. Now, it says when the worm escaped, Joe Biden, then the vice president, suspected Israel of hastening the program and breaking it. Son of a bitch, she said, or allegedly. Quote, it's got to be the Israelis. Now, think about how crazy that is, how much in history we know this. We know Israel attacked the USS Liberty as people on that ship continue to tell us today. We know that they stole nuclear technology from the US government. We know that they're involved with things like 9/11 and we have Israeli Mossad agents admitting to be Mossad agents that were caught by multiple people, including reported by the mainstream media, of celebrating while it was happening, or any number of examples. And all of these things get completely dismissed. And it's actually somehow racist to talk about these things. The point is that even Joe Biden can say, yep, they did that. We know they did. No one gets held accountable. There's no criminal action. It's overtly offensive. And they're still doing it today. These are the criminals, guys. These are the criminals. And whether the Bidens of the world and the Trumps and Obamas of the world are just at the mercy of a foreign government for whatever reason, or they're working together, it doesn't really matter in the context of this argument. Now, it says it infected 100 countries. So that's where it becomes a major crime, because they did this. And then it just hurt a lot of other people around the whole process. and affected 100 countries and tens of thousands of machines before it was stopped. So we're told, quote, somebody just used a new weapon and this weapon will not be put back in the box. Michael Hayden, a former NSA director, said that somebody was the United States. It has built a boomerang. It's incredible that that's just, we know this, yet back then they lied. They still lie about it if you really drive to it. And the point is that he said Israel did it and they did it together and they made this thing. And they, if that happened, it was Iran involved. Do you know what the US and Israel would do? You know what they would do. You see it every day. So why aren't they held accountable? Now think about this in the context of what's happening with COVID-19, what's happening with the kind of manipulations they're doing to drive forward this technology, and whether or not they would use something before they told us about it. Like this. But coming down to the final part, it says in the spring of 2017, still unknown hackers, calling themselves the shadow brokers, as we've talked about, infiltrated the NSA's zero-day archive. A box of digital pick locks. Right. So they have these things that they use to manipulate other countries. Now, remember, the idea is that we know that they have the ability to commit cyber attacks, commit any kind of digital attack, and make and leave the traces of somebody else to make it look like it was Iran. And yet we know that, and we still just listen to them when they tell us Iran did this and don't prove it. They walked into the cyber equivalent of Fort Knox and cleaned the place out. They stole cyber weapons and keys to the kingdom. I believe that was Israel. I believe that's constantly what's happening here, as that's been a classic kind of familiar situation between the U.S. government and Israel's government. Now, it says every second, Americans plug into the internet 127 devices. Every second, from refrigerators to thermostats and to library catalogs and bicycles. Now, think about what that means when every single one of those things is connected to a smart, to the Internet of Things. The Internet of Thoughts, connected to the smart devices on your skin. During the pandemic, the infrastructures of testing, care, and vaccination development and distribution have all been attacked. By the way, I don't really think that's the case. They've said that, sure, but there's been a lot of claims about things. But almost all of them haven't been verified. And the idea is that this is what it comes to, the idea, as they say right here, they've been attacked in what amounts to a cyber pandemic. But that's an odd thing. So you're claiming that people, there were so many cyber attacks that they can call it a pandemic, but we didn't even feel it? It didn't change anything? That seems like a forced effort to make us think about that. In March 2020, as the federal government first began to frame a response to COVID-19, hackers attacked the Department of Health and Human Services. Now, all of this comes down to the idea that they're building the narrative for a time, I think, when it will be blamed on an attack from a foreign country, where they attack vaccine infrastructure. They attack the development of vaccines. They attack a place like Fort Detrick and things get out and they blame it on the attack. Any number of these things would fall into the category of a cyber pandemic. And these would be things that could be used to justify lots of things that happen because of vaccines, lots of things that happen because of something that gets released, lots of things that happen for any number of reasons, right? And yet it can be easily said, well, they just hacked us and they have the tools because they stole it from us. As it says at the end, the arrogant recklessness of the people who have been buying and selling the vulnerability of the rest of us, like Israel, like the United States governments, is not just part of an intelligence agency game. It has been the ethos of Wall Street and the Silicon Valley for decades, which is the huge point of this article. They are the people that have been doing this, abusing it, selling out, taking what is ours and selling it as their own for decades. And now we're supposed to listen to tech companies advise the future of our world? They sure as hell want you to think so. Now, this is NPR saying the former director of CIA's counterterrorism operation argues that counterinsurgency tactics, like the ones they used in Afghanistan and Iraq, you know, the illegal occupations of those countries, are needed to fight the extremists who stormed the Capitol. Now they're saying that we need to use tactics they claim they used on terrorists, when really we know they were people that they were funding and working with, but that's different story, against you. Who didn't see that coming? A lot of the people that didn't listen to us, but we've been telling you for a long time. This was the point. It's directed at you. Now, all of this will tie back in with the same thing we were just talking about as they drive this in to be the presence of whatever entity is driving this to happen in our country. and then justifying what they do inside of it. But bringing it into COVID-19 and the vaccine discussion under the idea of what we just talked about with nanotechnology and everything else, the UK terrorism chief calls for a national debate on criminalizing doubts about COVID-19 vaccines. So not even just doubts, having concerns about something that should be concerning, criminalizing the idea, the discussion of that. That is incredible. Alarming, incredible. But bringing it into the vaccine, let's make sure we understand why that's so incredible. 501 deaths, 10,748 other injuries reported following COVID-19 vaccines, latest CDC data shows. As always, doing a great job on the Defender, really keeping up on the information, but it's all here under on Veyers, and I've been keeping up on this. As always, my point before is that they'll tell you, and as RFK Jr. and the Defender actually made the point, that less than 1% by their own admission gets reported. Less than 1%. Do the math in your head on what you're looking at right now. So if that, but that point is that that's why they set this Veyer system up, so that they could dismiss it. Because they're going to say, well, it's only reported. We can't prove it. Well, that's easy, isn't it? And if we know it's under 1%, well, they just get, well, we don't know for sure. Every time we see someone get sick or get hurt from these things, they go, well, we don't know for sure. But of course, if they die after a test from a PCR test that has a huge false positive rate, they just guarantee that it's COVID-19 for your safety, of course. And then completely contradict that logic by doing the opposite when it comes to these. But we know there's more going on here. Here's an example. Scottish care home tragedy as 10 residents die amid 68 positive tests. Well, at first, I found it interesting this article doesn't really get into what happened beforehand. So you're thinking, what could have happened? How did they die? 10 residents have died from coronavirus amid a coronavirus outbreak at the Fife care home. Health chiefs identified a cluster of cases where 68 residents have been confirmed positive for the disease. You know, using a PCR test that has potentially 95% false positive rate when using 40 to 45 cycle threshold, which most of this country is. So take it for what you will. NHS Fife reported 25 residents returned positive tests for the virus, with 43 staff also infected. Now, the 10 residents that passed away are what become interesting to me. The care home had been closed to new admissions last month after the cases were identified, but has since reopened. Which is, why is anybody putting more people into the homes? It's like we're filling the beds of the people that are dying off at an exponential rate. The guy we just talked about, the guy said they're dropping like flies, and nobody wants to acknowledge this. But yeah, let's just keep reopening it and letting them back in, and we just keep hyping up the numbers. But it says the NHS's Fife Health Protection Team and the Fife Health and Social Care Partnership work closely with the council's environmental health services to support the management of the care home and offer advice to prevent the spread of the virus. The care home was closed to new admissions and has since been reopened. I think I didn't need to highlight that. A Scott care home worker has left in shock after her healthy husband died a week after testing positive for COVID-19, which also doesn't seem to make sense. We're continuing to see all these closely tied vaccine-related deaths where it's suddenly they get vaccinated or they get tested positive and they die 2 days later. They die a day later. None of that makes any sense when they didn't have any symptoms and suddenly die 2 days later. It doesn't even line up with what they're telling us has happened before. But a week later, tested positive, died. Who lived in, but he was from Northern Ireland, had no previous health conditions. His family was stunned by the sudden death. The dad of one was just 38 years old, appeared to be on the mend after suffering from a cough. His body was discovered at his home on Saturday. The bingo worker had been taking lockdown very seriously and following guidance so much that he barely went outside. He even ordered in his food, but yet somehow this still happened anyway. Interesting context for you to understand. But here's what I found when I dug further. Other stories reporting the full story. 10 people dead. Same discussion. 25 residents, 43 staff members. A total of 25 residents tested positive, 43 tested positive that were staff. Quote, sadly, 10 people died after contracting COVID-19. And our thoughts are with the loved ones, even though we haven't proven that that's in fact what happened, but we'll happily report it like that. On January 13th, NHS Fife confirmed that the first round of COVID vaccinations had been carried out in all of the regions. It's funny how that's the last part of the story. It's interesting how even the other story didn't even mention that they had been vaccinated before this happened. Isn't that funny? It's almost like they don't want you thinking about that. Anyone experiencing COVID symptoms, regardless of how mild, are being urged to immediately self-isolate and arrange a test. And that's the point. So you can have the sniffles and they're, isolate yourself, go and take a test. And you get a test that tells you you're sick when usually you're not. And then suddenly you think you have it. That gets added as a confirmed case. That's what they're calling a confirmed case, even though it's by no stretch of the imagination confirmed. But that's what's happening. So everybody anywhere that's even mildly thinking they might be sick or even afraid they might be because you got contact with somebody you thought was sick because they were told they're sick, gets a test and is told they're sick, and on and on and on and on. And guess what? This whole time, everybody being contact traced is contact tracing everybody. You, the people they bumped into, everyone, it continues on forever. But the point being, 10 people died after vaccinations were given. That's a true statement. Doesn't mean you can prove that they died because of the vaccines. But how many times do we need to see a rollout of vaccinations in a place where they weren't really having an issue, and then suddenly, and even more so, before I even get to that point, isn't the vaccine supposed to do something to help? It's almost like every time they get them, and then it all happens. Oh, yeah, it does happen. Yeah, people die because they're old. That's all we're getting. That's all we're getting. Here's another example. Same scenario. 22 die after Basingstoke care home outbreak. Same idea. The number of deaths accounted for approximately a third of the entire living home. How likely do you think it is that a third of the home will die at the same time frame? Doesn't that sound like there was an event that happened where they were all in the same kind of death cycle pace? Certainly does to me, but I guess that's just too logical. We can only do based on what we can prove. And of course, they'll never really prove anything because they won't really be looking for anything. As a company, we are supporting the vaccine rollout, and our focus remains on supporting of the well-being of the residents. So yes, the vaccine rollout, meaning they had been vaccinated and the rollout had taken place. It says she added that, quote, protection from the vaccines takes time. So that's her saying, yes, we know we vaccinated them and then they died, but it's because it takes time. You just got to let it set in. How many times, guys? It's insulting and depressing that we're watching these people get killed. To pretend that something like this, where they're dying right afterward, where was that? I swear I had another example that I hope I didn't lose that. Dang it. We have examples of these people dying. Oh, it's right here. I must have put it too far down. That was supposed to be the next one. A healthy 19-year-old, immediately, racing heart, shortness of breath after his second COVID dose. Test confirm. Myocarditis, a heart inflammation. He's now in the ICU. Here's what they have to say. Ugh, gosh, I hate these. It's always the ones you expect. It refreshes. Who knows what they changed this time? But there's the point was simply reading on Jerusalem Post saying that inflammation. Remember the inflammation aspect that Dr. Pavlovsky talks about, the idea that this is a very common thing that's being caused by these vaccines, and it's not okay. Yet we'll pretend like, we don't know for sure. It happened instantly. He instantly got affected. But who knows? It may be, this refreshed on us again. Look at that. Quote, the fact that symptoms started immediately after the vaccine raises suspicion that the reaction may have caused this. Yeah. But so understand what he's saying right there. That's what they changed. That's incredible. Gosh, it drives me crazy. I've literally remembered this. I highlighted the fact that they stated that there was a vaccine reaction. This is the kind of mainstream media we're talking about, guys. Do you see an alteration? Do you see an asterisk that say, we changed what we said because it was incorrect? No, they don't do that because they're not honest, guys. They're not honest. None of them are. They're constantly trying to vie for your control of what you think. The point is that there was a reported side effect, and they're just now claiming that, this is what it will change to. The fact that the symptom, it was actually up here, that the inflammation was developed as a side effect of the vaccination has not been confirmed. But it says the fact that the symptoms started immediately raises suspicion that an immunological reaction may have caused the inflammation. Yeah, quite a suspicion. Instantly, right? I mean, if you ate something and instantly had a reaction, would you then go on to be like, gee, maybe it was what I ate yesterday? I can't know for sure. This is pathetically stupid, and they just are playing on the ignorance, or rather the willingness of people to not challenge the gospel of vaccines. The young man received treatment at the center on Sunday night before transferring. When he had received the second dose, he had experienced an accelerated heartbeat, along with shortness of breath and sharp pains that were radiating down his left arm. All normal, according to the mainstream. He took blood tests that revealed heart inflammation that happened instantly after this, but we don't know for sure. God, here's the point. He has no underlying medical conditions. None of this makes any sense. But as we see, Yeah, the point is right here that we're saying we have not been confirmed. We don't know for sure. This whole article's changed, by the way, since I last read it. So I'm not even going to try to push in. And just, the point is that they're trying to, again, float the idea that, well, we don't know. It could be anything. But that's just ridiculous. It is really ridiculous. The argument should be it's most likely the vaccine, but we're going to make sure we check in to cross out any other possibilities. That will be an honest discussion. The same way that they report that in any other way. When you have, in this case, we have the obvious tie to the vaccine that was just taken. But what they do is they come out and go, it's probably not the vaccine, but we're going to continue to look into it. That's not how, that's a dishonest way to present this, because the obvious marker, the link is that it just happened. Oh, that's right. You see, this is so frustrating to me that I have this stuff in here. Oh, here we go. No, that's right. I was still frustrated that I thought they changed the article, but let's just jump at this point in any case. So this is the idea we're talking about. So people are having these reactions and they're trying to pretend like, well, who knows? It could be anything. But they're straight up telling you that this is going to happen. But what they're doing is trying to convince you that it's totally normal, though. The second COVID-19 shot is a rude awakening for immune cells. Side effects are just a sign that protection's kicking in as it should. I hope that Catherine J. Wu and the Atlantic are held legally liable for such medical misinformation. The fact that this is happening are a screaming red waving flag of a concern that this should not be taken. Your body reacts this way when things are not right. You don't have streaming pain down your arm and huge rashes and medical inflammation when this is just the way your immune system works. When's the last time you got sick and you had all these things happen when you were fighting off a virus? This is not happening because of your immune system. It's happening because of the genetic material that's being pumped into your body with lipid nanoparticles that are completely messing. They're causing pathogenic priming and causing antibody dependent enhancement and causing all kinds of things. The polyethylene glycol, which is the what we're talking about, is causing all kinds of allergic reactions. I mean, all of this stuff is easily shown, and all they can do is tell you, don't worry, it's just your immune system kicking in. It makes me sick. Like I want to talk to these people and let them know what a bad person they are, or just how dumb they are to believe this stuff. But as it says, about 2 a.m. on Thursday morning, I woke to find my husband shivering beside me. For hours, he had been tossing in bed, exhausted, but unable to sleep, nursing chills and a fever and an agonizingly sore left arm. Sounds real healthy, right? His teeth were chattering. His forehead was freckled with sweat. And I lay next to him, clenching a blanket after blanket around his arms. I felt an immense sense of relief. That's not a joke. All this misery was a sign that the immune cells in his body had been riled up by the second shot of a COVID-19 vaccine. And we're well on our way to guarding him from the future disease. My jaw dropped. Truly intense. I mean, that is sickening. That they're trying to frame this as, don't worry, that you know that this will hurt people. People will choose not to seek medical help because they think that that description of that's a description of a virus. That's a description of a horrifying disease you're dealing with, right? Not some passing thing because of that's terrible. Let alone dying, as we're seeing. But no, the people will just go, oh, it's okay that I'm on my deathbed here, teeth chattering, sweating, exhausted, can't sleep, shivers, headaches, sweating, swelling, hurting, pain. And it's all good, though. It's only my immune system. Side effects are a natural part of the vaccination process, they say. No, it's actually not. Now, you can have some side effects, right? The idea that you can see some kind of a reaction, but saying just generally that, quote, side effects are a natural part. So death is a side effect. Is that a natural part? Bell's palsy, we've already seen, is a side effect. Is that a natural part of the vaccine process? They're manipulating you in a gross and wildly dishonest way. But the two COVID-19 vaccines, she says, cleared for emergency use in the United States. She says already have reputations for raising the hackles of the immune system, which translates to creating a really horrible situation for you. Multiple days of bedridden, horrendous pain. That's what they told us. Days where you can't go to work. In both companies' clinical trials, at least a third of the volunteers ended up with symptoms such as headaches, fatigue, fever, like my husband's, were less common. Except that all of what we're seeing, they just keep pretending isn't happening, though. We can't prove it, so we won't talk about it like it's real. Dose number two is more likely to pack a punch, she says, in large part because of the effects of the second shot build interactively on the first. So because it's way worse the second time, that's just a sign that your body's okay with it, that it's working for you. Like if the first one makes it in this, if the first one in your body creates a problem, then the second one comes in and your body fights it even harder. Is that a sign that it's right and okay? Or a sign that your body's going, what in the hell are you doing? My husband, who is a neurologist at Yale New Haven Hospital, is one of many who had a worse experience with his second shot than his first, which, by the way, is what pretty much everybody's being told they're going to have. But much like any other learning process, in this one, repetition is key. When hit with the second injection, the immune system recognizes the onslaught and starts to take it even more seriously. That does not sound like what a normal body, that sounds like what your body does when this is a bad thing entering your body. The body's encore act, uncomfortable though it may be, is evidence that the immune system is solidifying its defenses. That's just, you know what? I need to talk to a virologist about this and get the straight up medical opinion, because I can already hear these people talk. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a scientist. But I can tell you, based on what they have previously told us and what I do understand about this, that everything about this feels wrong. Quote, by the second vaccine, it's already amped up and ready to go. Shouldn't it be the other way around? Fortunately, side effects resolve quickly. That's if you're choosing to ignore the litany of side effects that you're pretending aren't happening. Whereas COVID-19 can bring on debilitating months-long symptoms, that's not what I'm seeing, and has killed more than 2 million people, according to numbers that are obviously bloated, by combining pneumonia and flu, by adding a PCR test with massive false positives, by putting death certificates that are not actually COVID-19 deaths. But sure, let's just continue to cite these obviously bloated numbers, because that's good journalism, right? But months-long symptoms, really? Like, I've already seen people the idea is that we have a lot of these asymptomatic scenarios, and a lot of these people, I mean, look, I could get bogged down in these things forever, but this information is far from certain. To ensure safe passage of mRNA into cells, the vaccine makers swathe the molecules in greasy bubbles called lipid nanoparticles. Yeah, that sounds really good for your body. But the point is, nanoparticles, the lipid nanoparticles, the polyethylene glycol, is causing, for sure, allergic reactions. Wikipedia says right there that 70% of the people in the world will have a reaction. I mean, it's a no-brainer. People like James Lyon Weiler, PhD, reached out to them before they made these and said, this is dangerous. There's unsafe epitopes in here. There's all kinds of things, and nobody cared to listen. Once they spot the nanoparticles, these cells dispatch molecular alarms called cytokines that recruit other immune cells to the site of the injection, you know, or they create a cytokine storm that causes your body to attack itself. But, you know, who cares about that? The congregating cells spew out more cytokines still, flooding the rest of the body with signals that can seed system-wide symptoms such as fever and fatigue. So it sort of sounds like your body's attacking itself, and they're going, yeah, it's okay, it's your immune system. The mRNA itself might also tickle a reaction out of the immune system simply because of how unusual it looks. Yeah, it might just tickle a reaction out of your immune. This is so wildly unscientific and off the beaten path. I don't even think they fully know what's happening. Or is going to happen, I should say. The provocative nature of mRNA might help explain why Moderna's shot, which contains three times as much of the genetic material as Pfizer's, was linked to more effects in the clinical trials. You know what? I wonder if anybody out there thought of the same thing I did when I read that. So before I move forward, the point is, don't worry about these horrendous things that are obviously unnatural. It's all good. It's your immune system that's never happened before, but it's natural because we tell you it is. Okay. But then moving forward, the provocative nature of this may explain why it has three times the genetic material. Excuse me? The UK is talking about mixing these vaccines? That's happening, guys. They put it forward. Their own scientists came out and said, that's really crazy. They quote, said they are trying to guess their way out of a problem. That was their experts from the UK government. And now they're doing it anyway, launching the world first trial mixing different COVID vaccines. I was blown away by that when I discussed the idea that they have different holding temperatures, right? They have different time frames between when you're supposed to take the second dose. Then add on, well, just casually, that one has three times as much genetic material. But go ahead and mix and match. No big deal. That's not a joke, guys. And we're the ones being crazy. A trial is being launched in the UK to explore whether the difference of COVID-19 vaccines for the first and second shot works. They're going to hurt people. It's already happened. Well, they already are. So the same deal. We need to stop all of this from happening, in my opinion. And this is what we're continuing to see, is less concern. Pregnant women may now receive the COVID vaccine safely, WHO says. How do they know that? I guess they just made up their mind. You know why I say that? Because there's no studies that show that. And they'll tell you that. We do not know should be the answer. But they're telling you, go ahead. Go ahead and do it because, well, we don't know that it's not safe. I'm not even kidding. That's actually what's being said. Anybody who is pregnant getting this shot is a bad person or completely swayed by the lies of their government. I mean, I don't understand how you would ever even do. I don't understand why you would get vaccinated at all when you're pregnant. It just doesn't make sense because you don't know how it reacts with these things. They don't test for this stuff. They'll tell you that. They don't even test the combination of these vaccines that go into your child's body. They don't test them with each other. How does that make sense? The WHO on Friday changed its advice for pregnant women considering a COVID-19 vaccine, abandoning language opposing immunization for most expected mothers, unless they were at high risk. The idea was, well, it's, you know, this is just that dangerous that we have to, but that's not the case. Several experts, in fact, had expressed disappointment on Thursday with their position. The experts noted that it was inconsistent with guidance on the same issue from the US CDC. So now we've got the CDC saying one thing, WHO and the other. Neither one of them have any guidance or any real research on this topic. And they said, well, this is going to confuse pregnant women looking for clear advice. Well, you don't say. Well, it'll confuse them like every other thing they've done this whole time. Flipping back and forth and saying this and then saying that, saying, well, this would count and this won't count. By the way, here is the very person telling us that lockdowns don't actually work from the WHO, and yet they're still happening.
A problem we don't think about in lockdowns is that they're very nationalistic, that if we lock down our economy, then it hits our economy. But it also means we are not buying stuff. We're not trading with weaker economies. We are not just destroying our own jobs. We're destroying the jobs of all those that in the poorer parts of the world that export to us. That seemed to me to be a reasonable point.
Really important point by Professor Gupta. I want to say it again. We in the World Health Organization do not advocate lockdowns as a primary means of control of this virus. The only time we believe a lockdown is justified is to buy you time to reorganize, regroup, rebalance your resources, protect your health workers who are exhausted. But by and large, we'd rather not do it. Just look at what's happened to the tourism industry, for example.
A main point being, we don't think this should be done the way it's being done. Now, we have to listen to the WHO. You can't challenge the WHO up until they say what you don't like, and then we just disregard it. That's just like the dumbest thing I could possibly imagine. And people are still going, okay, like, well, we will be censored if we challenge them, but they all just challenge them. Because it totally makes sense. You understand that all these countries are literally doing the opposite of what they just said. That guy's on the council, the board, the group that considers these things and makes these agreements and makes these statements. They challenge what everybody is doing. So why do they get to challenge the WHO? The media, the governments, are they experts? It's so painfully apparent how dishonest this whole damn thing is. Now, going forward, it says several experts had expressed disappointment on Thursday with their position, as I just read, saying basically it's inconsistent. So the point was seeing how in other places they're just as inconsistent. No one cares. A earlier version of the article stated the WHO had changed its guidance. Organization officials have since pointed out that the guidance has not been altered in the recommendations for these individual vaccines. Oh, so they didn't actually change the guidance. They just changed. They said, well, based on what we know about the vaccine, we don't have any specific reason to believe there will be specific risks that would outweigh the benefits of the vaccine to pregnant women. But we're gonna write on our website that you shouldn't take it. But we're going to say, you know, wink, wink, go ahead and do it, though. You're probably not in danger. Isn't that a perfect way to not be held accountable for the advice you're giving? Yes. But you're somehow allowing pregnant women to take a vaccine that has not been tested on pregnant women. That's correct. The vaccines made by Pfizer, BioNTech, and Moderna, while they have not been tested on pregnant women, have not shown any harmful effects in animal studies. Now, I guess we're just going to have to take at face value that they used pregnant animals to test that, and somehow then take at face value that translates to exactly what we're dealing with in pregnant women, but then also just recognize that that is not the right way to prove what we're talking about. And the technology used in the vaccines is generally known to be safe, they say. That's not true. This has never been done before. What experts are you talking about? Oh, we'll never get to know. The point is, they're saying that mRNA vaccine technology has been known, generally known to be safe. Why? Because of a rush study that wasn't completed and they even got emergency authorization use? That doesn't prove anything. They're lying to you. It just can't ever be more clear. Bothers me. I'm sure you can tell. It's just, it's unbelievable because this is happening. Because this is happening. Pregnant nurses, 14 weeks pregnant, fully vaccinated. I've suffered a miscarriage, 14 and a half weeks. But I guess we can't prove it, right? Can't prove that it was the vaccine. And no one will ever find out or investigate. Let me just make sure you heard that. Sarah Beltran Pons, MD, 14 weeks pregnant, fully vaccinated. I got the COVID vaccine to protect myself, my baby, my family, my patients, and my community. When it's available to you, I encourage you to do the same. Here it is. I've always been open about my motherhood journey in medicine, and it's with a heavy heart that I tell my Med Twitter family that I've suffered a miscarriage after 14 and a half weeks. So half a week later, days, 14 weeks, and at 14 and a half weeks, she has a miscarriage. Vaccinated at 14 weeks, 14 and a half weeks, has a miscarriage. That is what we're talking about. Nobody's discussing that. She won't say that. Why can't we put this together? I mean, it's a no-brainer that it is not tested on pregnant women. So when a pregnant woman gets the vaccine and days later loses her baby, well, but no, it's just not possible. It's fake news, no matter what you say. I feel horrible for her because she was tricked and swayed and manipulated by the very people that are lying to her, saying, go ahead and do it. You're all good. Because people in this field today are convinced that they should listen blindly to the CDC and the WHO and the HHS and all of them. That's the problem. X-ray technician, 60 years old. We've talked about him already. He was the one in the ICU. Well, he died. X-ray technician, 60 years old, who was excited to get the COVID vaccine, dies 2 days after getting second dose. Bad reaction, including breathing difficulties. But officials say his cause of death is inconclusive. Of course. We'll never know. Within hours, he was admitted to the ER with breathing issues. His kidneys began to fail and was officially pronounced dead on January 7th. Like all of these random problems, like we're just going to pretend like it just all of a sudden happened? Kidney problems, breathing issues out of nowhere. But yeah, it just must have been natural because he was old. Yeah, 60 years old. He's probably going to die soon anyway. Right? This is the mentality. However, within hours, the father of three reportedly suffered apparent adverse reaction, telling coworkers that he had sharp pains in his stomach and was having difficulties breathing. His symptoms worsened. His coworkers walked him over to the emergency room where he was placed on a ventilator 4 hours after arriving. Gee, I wonder what happened with his, I mean, you're being placed on a ventilator when you're having breathing problems with the situation. What has everybody told us so far? What has Dr. Rydell told us? We're operating in a false paradigm, and this is not what we're being treated, what we're trying to treat. The ventilators in this situation have been shown to vastly kill the patients. Doctors are speaking out about it everywhere, and they're still doing it, even to their own doctors, which means that they don't know how to think outside what they're told to do. It's very sad. 2 days later, on January 7th, he was transferred. So he's ventilated. 2 days later, transferred to another hospital, placed on an medically induced coma. His wife, Rochelle Zook, took the register that within hours, his kidneys started failing. Told the register before he was declared dead later that day. The family said he had high blood pressure, was slightly overweight, but otherwise had no underlying health conditions. The Orange County coroner said Zook's cause of death is currently inconclusive. And further toxicology testing will take months to complete. Well, and are we ever going to even hear what they have to say? No. If there is a correlation to the vaccine, the office said it will notify the OC healthcare agency, right? Not the news, not the media, not you, not anybody. They'll quietly tell somebody who will then quietly tell Pfizer, and it'll get shoved away in a shelf somewhere. In a statement to DailyMail.com, a Pfizer spokesperson said the company is aware of the death and investigating the matter. I mean, this, just think about foreign policy and the way they do this. Saudi Arabia, we're aware of the bus of children that was murdered, and we're going to look into it, and we'll investigate it thoroughly. A week later, we investigated ourselves. We found ourselves not guilty. That's what we're dealing. This is the same thing. This is the new war. We're in the new phase of whatever the world is becoming, and these are the people. These are the same engineers of social media, social manipulation. But to finish off, it says, based on ongoing safety reviews performed by Pfizer, BioNTech, and health authorities, the BNT162b2, which is the one we've talked about already, retains a positive benefit risk profile for the prevention of COVID-19. Oh, so in the face of your failing or dying, they go, well, it looks like it has a positive reaction based on our studies. So that's what we're going to say. Serious adverse reactions, including deaths that are unrelated to the vaccine, are unfortunately likely to occur. What did they just say? Serious adverse events. Adverse, meaning be caused by what we're dealing with, including death, but that are unrelated to the vaccine. That doesn't make any sense. That is an intentionally manipulative statement. So you think that adverse events like death are maybe normal, or at the very least unrelated to the vaccine, even though they're a serious adverse event? The dishonesty hurts me. Are unfortunately likely to occur at a similar rate as they would in the general population. Told you. So a 60-year-old person dies, and yeah, you know, he's probably going to die anyway. And, you know, and the vaccine's been shown to give positive benefits based on our own trials that we funded and we don't tell anybody about. But we're good, though. Sorry your person died, but it was his fault because he didn't do it right. Or, you know, whatever, they're constantly playing this game. But they care about your family and your loved ones, though. Now, here I will include again for you guys to look through for yourselves. I mean, I could probably update this right now and we'll find a bunch more. This is a constantly updating information database of all that's happening with these vaccines. This is what we were just talking about. But I mean, you can scroll down and continue to see him. 45-year-old Italian doctor in the prime of his life, in perfect health, drops dead after Pfizer vaccine. Drops dead. 39-year-old nurse, 42-year-old surgical technician, also dead. Dead. Gloucester resident dies within hours of receiving Pfizer vaccine. Oakland City woman protesting vaccine reports side effects. Health worker dies after receiving the vaccine. Conservancy worker dies days after receiving the vaccine. 19-year-old hospitalized after a second vaccine. Every single day, many people are, I mean, guys, this is happening every single, these are all, this is, look at the dates on these. February 1st, February 2nd, February 3rd, February 3rd, February 3rd. People are dying all, I mean, this is crazy. And nobody's reporting this stuff. Nobody. But they care about your lives, though. And then we're supposed to wonder why the Pentagon is telling you that unspecified numbers of troops are simply refusing the vaccine because they know that they've been tested on before and they don't want to do it again. Healthcare workers, people in care homes, minorities, all these people that they're telling you that they're all refusing this. That's why they're pretending and creating false scarcity so they don't say, nobody wants this dangerous thing. They act like it's an infrastructure problem. And they're probably going to blame Trump for some reason. People don't want to take this because they know it's dangerous. We all see it. And we need to be honest with ourselves. But they don't care what we think. As the Times points out, people who have not accepted vaccination offers could get knocks on the door from the council staff in an attempt to convince skeptics home by home. Yeah, it's in the UK, but this is going to happen, guys. We've already talked about this. I've already shown you documentation about how people have to respond to this. But here's the point I want you to remember. Highwire, and ICANN in general, but they talk about this a lot. I recommend if you haven't watched his channel, and you do. If you or anyone, he says, you know, is being required by an employer or school to receive a COVID-19 vaccine, ICANN is offering to support legal action on your behalf to challenge the requirement. So anybody out there that's in this position, please take the time to read the link, dive into this, and ask for help, because they'll help you. Here is the MDU saying, well, the government must act now to ensure that all National Health Service's healthcare professionals currently making enormous sacrifices, well, I guess that's a bit of an assumption because I doubt everybody's making enormous sacrifices, are exempt from COVID-19 related clinical negligence claims. Oh, now we see why. Okay, so we're going to just broadly say that everybody anywhere that's a nurse or a medical professional is sacrificing everything for everybody all the time. But then the real point is we need to make sure that they're exempt from their choices or from liability for their choices. By the way, that's already basically happening, at least in the United States, where the nursing professionals, the infrastructure, the truck drivers, anybody involved with the vaccine process is completely immune from liability. According to the HHS, which is sickening. But here we are in the UK. And they're asking for the individuals to be exempt from COVID-19 related clinical negligence claims. Why would they be asking that? Because there is a hell of a lot happening around treatment in regard to COVID that is going to be later called out. And they know that. So instead of taking a stand and being honest and going, I don't agree, this is the right thing, they'll just keep using into ventilators and killing people up until the point when they change their direction. And then they can say, well, I'm not accountable because I was just doing what I was told. Don't you love how I was just doing what I was told somehow works today, even though we have historical precedent for why that's not allowed? Who cares? I was just doing what I was told. I'm just following what I'm just an officer of the law, just doing what my bosses tell me. Yeah, well, you violate our rights and violate the Constitution and your oath, but sure, just do what you're told. This is gross. The emotional turmoil of being subject to lengthy clinical negligence proceedings. Do you understand how crazy that is? Let me read this fully. The emotional turmoil of being subject to lengthy criminal clinical negligence proceedings long after the event can be deeply traumatic experience. It is not uncommon for NHS staff subject to a claim to suffer from mental health problems. So what? You're talking about somebody committing negligence. And we're gonna go, you have a mental problem because you're upset about how you accidentally killed somebody or how you accidentally cut someone's leg off in the wrong spot or how negligence, guys. The argument here is that when something bad happens that's not related to their actions, well, you could argue that and say, well, they shouldn't be held accountable if it wasn't their fault. But she's not asking for that. She's simply saying that going through a lengthy clinical negligence proceeding, implying that there's a proceeding, that negligence is the claim, that you did something that people are saying that was your fault and you hurt somebody. But God forbid it should be a long process, and God forbid you should have to suffer from some anguish after you did something that hurt somebody. Right? The whole reason this is so funny to me is because they're just simply trying to paint these people as any other kind of hero we've made today, right? That police or any of these people, these medical doctors or scientists, they're a special class and you can't even insult them like the media. They're their own class. You're not allowed to insult the media. That's what this is. These people are not above you. But that's what they're trying to paint here. Every nurse is a hero. What about the one that was just giving my grandma heroin until she died? Is that one a hero too? What about the one over here that was stealing the opioids from that person? Is she a hero too? Yes, that's not everybody, but they exist and we all know it. So let's not be so ignorant and continue to pretend like everybody anywhere in some group is all one thing. That's used to be called racist, of course, but you know, it's funny how we're hypocrites everywhere we turn today. But to finish off, it's all an illusion. We should know that by now. The British Medical Journal is accusing the entire damn thing of corruption, suppression of science, and politicization. That is what the British Medical Journal is calling out about COVID-19 in November 13th, 2020. How in the world can this happen in November of last year and nobody in the media talks about it? Let's finish off with this, because this is an important note for you to take home with you. When good science is suppressed by the medical political complex, people die. The title is COVID-19, Politicization, Corruption, and Suppression of Science. It says politicians and governments are suppressing science. Period. Just love how that starts out, right? Can you imagine? I just love the analogy. Like, take that sentence, go on Twitter, and just share it. I think politicians and governments are suppressing science. People would go to town. Oh, you denier, you anti-vaxxer. It's just Here's the British Medical Journal just stating it as a casual fact, because we know this. All those morons on these platforms out there that will just completely regurgitate what they're told, that is the lowest common denominator. That is the group that they radicalize up in different framing than I'm talking about MAGA and all them. But, you know, they get them all worked up and they present them as the majority. That's what it is. They want you to look at them like the majority, but they're not. They're the ones that are the easiestly manipulated. That's why they're using them. Politicians and governments are suppressing science. Science is being suppressed for political and financial gain. COVID-19 has unleashed state corruption on a grand scale and is harmful to public health. That's baffling. Where is anybody talking about this? That's a huge, I mean, that is chopping at the foundation of everything that this is. Unleashed a state corruption on a grand scale that is harmful to public health. I mean, they're telling you that their treatment and their reactions around COVID-19 is in fact harming your health. But no one wants to talk about that. Politicians and industry are responsible for their opportunistic embezzlement. They use the word embezzlement. So too are scientists and health experts. The pandemic has revealed how the medical political complex can be manipulated in an emergency. What a conspiracy theorist, right? Sounds like exactly what I've been saying. A time when it is even more important to safeguard science. The UK's pandemic response provides at least four examples of suppression of science or scientists. Lost my place. I looked. Okay, there we go. First, the membership, research, and deliberations of the Scientific Advisory Group for Emergencies, otherwise known as SAGE, who's been a key part of the manipulation here, they're telling you that this group were initially secret until a press leak forced transparency. The leak revealed inappropriate involvement of government advisors in SAGE. You know, the kind of thing that we've been warned about. The insiders and the people, the advocates who have a vested interest in certain things being driving government policy. The government shouldn't be involved with people who are supposed to be informing scientific direction, but that's what we're talking about, while exposing underrepresentation from public health, clinical care people. The point is, this is government and politics driving the direction, which is exactly what the WHO admitted to about lockdowns, or excuse me, about masks. Point blank saying, or rather not denying the fact that they simply went ahead with the mandate for lobbying reasons. That's what they said. And yet here we are being screamed down because masks work and everybody knows it despite the science. But it says the incident relates to research published this week by the British Medical Journal, which finds that the government procured an antibody test that in real world tests falls well short of performance claims made by its manufacturers. What do you know? Now we're on to the test manipulation. And they're telling you that the government procured a test that they knew was not good enough, but they did it anyway. I just can't stand how we're talking about this stuff every day and we're showing you the facts and we're even pointing to their, people still don't buy it. Crazy. Researchers from Public Health England and collaborating institutions sensibly pushed to publish their study findings before the government committed to buying a million of these tests, but were blocked by the health department and the prime minister's office. So people who showed you that these tests weren't suited for the job tried to get their test out. And they said, look, guys, it doesn't work. And the health department said, shh, quiet. We don't want you to know it doesn't work. You shut up over there. We're trying to make money. Why was it important to procure this product without due scrutiny, they ask? Good question. You know what? Nobody will ever know because nobody will ever really ask. As if to prove a point, Public Health England successfully attempted to block not only the thing we just talked about, but block the British Medical Journal's press release about the research paper. The British Medical Journal. So the Public Health of England blocked the British Medical Journal's press release about a study that showed their test didn't work. I wonder what they're trying to hide. Maybe the entire linchpin of the illusion of what's going on? Politicians often claim to follow the science, but that is misleading, the British Medical Journal says, and it's an oversimplification. Science is rarely absolute. It rarely applies to every setting or every population. It doesn't make sense to slavishly follow science or evidence. A better approach is for politicians, the publicly appointed decision makers, to be informed and guided by science when they decide policy for their public. What a novel approach, right? You know, involvement from the people that they're telling what to do. But even that approach retains public and professional trust only if science is available for scrutiny and free of political interference, and if the system is transparent and not compromised by conflicts of interest. Crazy novel idea, don't you think? It's like, it's almost, that's what they pretend we're doing. But obviously that's not what's happening. The UK's pandemic response relies too heavily on scientists and other government appointees with worrying competing interests. Well, it's almost like we've heard this before, including shareholders in companies that manufacture COVID-19 diagnostic tests, treatments, and vaccines. Oh, what do you know? By the way, every one of these points is sourced right down here, so you can read them for yourself. Fake news. Somebody, I'm sure, will make the claim regardless of where it comes from. Now it says, just lost my point there as I'm scrolling down. Let's see, where were we? Vaccine. Shoot, I just totally lost my place. Follow science. But even their approach retains public and professional trust only if science is available for scrutiny. Right. The UK's pandemic response relies too heavily on scientists and other government appointees with worrying competing interests, including shareholders. I already read that. Oh, here it was. Government appointees are able to ignore or cherry pick science. Don't you love that? I love that they called them out. This is the British Medical Journal calling out the media, the governments, for cherry picking science. It's just priceless. Government appointees are able to ignore or cherry pick science, another form of misuse, and indulge in anti-competitive practices that favor their own products and those of friends and associates. That's a crime. It's just so crazy. It's just casually discussing this entire criminal organization that is our government. The first step, or rather multiple governments, the first step is full disclosure of competing interests from government, politicians, scientific advisors, and appointees, which will never happen, such as the heads of Test and Trace in the UK, diagnostic test procurement, and vaccine delivery, all of which, their point is, have complete obvious conflicts of interest. The next step is full transparency about decision-making systems, processes, and knowing who is accountable for what. That's not even close to what's happening today. By the way, all this is no-brainer stuff that anybody would be like, yeah, isn't that what already happens? Anybody that doesn't pay attention anyway. Individuals employed by government should ideally only work in areas unrelated to their competing interests. Yeah, of course, right? Well, yeah, they shouldn't work in the way in the position that they can possibly use to benefit their own profits. Yeah, of course, obviously. But that's everywhere. But then they say, well, we have to because the field is so limited. But that's not true. Expertise is possible without competing interests. And by the way, I've shown you that the data actually shows that it's obviously not true. They want the people they know they can manipulate, control, and work with, and that's why they keep them in the place. And they just sign waivers and say, yeah, well, I know our rule says they can't work there, but we'll sign the waiver. It says, if such a strict rule becomes impractical, minimum good practice is that people with competing interests, so this is what would happen if this is the case they're in, must not be involved in decisions on products and policies in which they have a financial interest. It's no-brainer, again, but people like Monsef Salawi are at the key positions that then can benefit exactly who they're involved with. It's crazy. Science is a good, science is a public good. It doesn't need to be followed blindly, but it does need to be fairly considered. Importantly, suppressing science, whether by delaying publication, cherry-picking favorable research, or gagging scientists, think about that, that's everywhere today, is a danger to public health. Now, they didn't say gagging scientists that are true or that are correct or that are right or that have certain fields. No, they just said gagging scientists. So people that are scientists that have their credentials have a right to speak about scientific matters, even if you don't like what they're saying. But they don't care. So what the BMJ is telling you is that what your governments are doing by gagging those scientists is threatening your public health. Hopefully you can pick up on that. Politicization of science was enthusiastically deployed by some of history's worst autocrats and dictators. Exactly. And it is now regrettably commonplace in democracies, or places that pretend to be democracies. The medical political complex tends towards suppression of science that's interesting, to aggrandize and enrich those in power. This sounds like a conspiracy document, doesn't it? And as the powerful become more successful, richer, and further intoxicated with power, the inconvenient truths of science are suppressed. When good science is suppressed, people die. Yeah, of course. Of course. And we know this. And just to finish off, don't forget that so here we are, 2020, the British Medical Journal pointing this out. There's a problem with lobbyists and special interests and how they're controlling the direction and has nothing to do with what's right and safe and what and suppression of science and corruption and all of this. It's almost like nobody's called this out before, but you know, as I pointed out, that WHO, among many others, called it out all the way back in 2011. And then, of course, they got rid of all the people that were daring to point out the truth and brought in people like Tedros and said, are you willing to do what you're told? Good. Now you're in position. As it says, to finish off, the repeated pandemic health scares caused by the avian H5N1 and the new H1N1 human influenza virus are part of a culture of fear. Worst case thinking replaced balanced risk assessment. Useless antivirals and irrational vaccine policies. 2011, the WHO said this. In both pandemics of fear, meaning not accurate, not real, fake pandemics as they called them themselves, the exaggerated claims of a severe public health threat stemmed primarily from disease advocacy by influenza experts, which is exactly what the British Medical Journal is warning about. Disease experts wish to capture public attention and sway resource allocation decisions in favor of their disease of interest. The key to responsible policymaking is not bureaucracy, but accountability and independence from interest groups. Decisions must be based on adaptive responses to emerging problems, not on definitions. But this is where we are. So how is it the WHO can point this out in 2011? The British Medical Journal can point this out in November 2020, and nothing stops. Are these not literally the groups that we're told to listen to? The WHO? The main scientific publication? What's happening? I thought we were trusting the science, right? Apparently not. Apparently not. Apparently, we're trusting whatever they tell us is the science. And that is the point. Now, today, I really want people to revisit the discussion of the nanotechnology point. I want people to continue to dive into what that means and how real it is right now and see what you find. Reach out to me. Tell me what you're looking at here, because I believe there's so much more going on around us that we're not seeing. And I just at the very least hope people can recognize that it's absolutely real world. Not tomorrow, not a week from now. That is literally being built. It's literally being used now. So we need to take action now, like the guy warned us about. Or we'll wake up tomorrow in the world that we can't control. Like, as if we can control anything now, but a world that we won't have any input on going forward. That's the point. And all, you know, if all you're going to do is listen to all the propaganda outlets, like the ones you can see there, Fox, CNN, the whole damn thing, well, you're going to be swayed right into the way they want you to go. Don't think for yourselves. I mean, it's really that simple. Take the time to think outside the box and ask the questions, even the ones that they're telling you are crazy. I mean, look, it doesn't mean you have to believe this. I mean, that's the classic quote. It's a sign of intelligence is being able to entertain a thought without accepting it. So when they tell you, let's just say, you know, whatever, there's microchips in the vaccine, you should stand back and go, I don't believe that, if that's the case. But then go, okay, let's ask the question. Is it possible? Well, yeah, it's obviously possible. The technology's there. People could do whatever they want. Sure, it's possible. Okay, so then what point does it become completely crazy conspiracy theory? If it's possible, if they've done something like that before. Now, understand, I'm not even trying to push the idea that I think that's happening. I think I made that clear. But it's about being open to asking the very things that they want you to believe are outside the realm of possibility. Because historically speaking, those tend to be the things that happen next. So think for yourselves. Thank you all for being here. I love you all. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Struggles we bear. Make you listen, McLean.
see the struggles we've been. Nobody don't care. I'm stuck in my house.
No kind of fear. Who the hell is this woman?
Nobody don't care.
What are you doing? What are these poor women doing?
Stuck in my house. All kind of fear. Nobody don't care. I tell you, nobody cares. I turn on my TV, everybody is fighting, they're fighting. Can't you see that they're fighting, they're fighting us? They're afraid of the whole of us, soul of us. Can't you see that they're fighting, they're fighting us? Cause they don't wanna see us living together. They prefer seeing us canceling each other. They wanna see us die, don't wanna see us try.
Fear-mongering that is trending. 1984, them defending. Global reset and new life pending. Better wake up and stop from sleeping. Remember the FEMA campus, they're waiting. Who knows what I take them indoctrination. No education, no depopulation. Everything I've seen in the last 9 days, all the things that just don't make sense, the patients I'm seeing in front of me, the lungs I'm trying to improve, have led me to believe that COVID-19 is not this disease, and that we are operating under a medical paradigm that is untrue.
It's time to unite, get up and fight. Oh, it's time to unite. Yes, it's time to fight.
Revolution will be televised. Ain't no time for go away from no guy. Now nah, each now waste no time. Chinese now get left behind. Never move to the right to the right.
Where's the grave concern if you're going to be injected with these same proteins? Not a single, to my knowledge, not a single vaccine manufacturer took heed of my warning to remove those unsafe epitopes from the vaccines before they formulated their vaccines, in spite of being emailed.
Wait a minute, don't take her away! Hey, don't take her away! Don't take her away! Don't take her away, you bastard!
If you stand for nothing, you fall for everything.
It's the message.